What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 104 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V. That is Noxious, back from China.
Yes, that's me. That's right.
And we've got Disguised Toast on as our guest today. Welcome, Toast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to talk about all the happenings in Hearthstone.
All the happenings.
All the happenings.
Everything.
All of them. All of the happenings.
That sounds like a movie, The Happenings. The Hearthstone
happenings. Like a Chinese store name.
The Chinese store name. What's inside that store?
Joyful Happenings.
Joyful. That's like direct English translations of
yeah, of course. Of but that's what Chinese stores sound
oh,
like,
so
dude.
Bad.
We were in the Happiness Hotel in China. You think I'm fucking with you, but I'm serious.
So were you happy?
The Happiness
Did
Hotel.
You leave happy?
I was the happiest I'd ever been. It was the best. I would recommend the Happiness Hotel to anyone. Some sketchy stuff goes down in the bar.
So there's happy endings at the bar? Is that what you're saying?
Some sketchy stuff happens at the bar, yeah.
Okay.
The happiness is found there, I believe. That's what's supposed to be.
You believe, you remember. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Well,
anyway.
Those of you who've never seen the show, this is a Hearthstone podcast discussion show where we talk about all the big topics as well as decks and cards and all that, just everything related to Hearthstone. And today we're going to be focused a lot on the developer's insight, which happened this past Friday with Ben Brode and Ixar, giving us some updates on a lot of the questions that we have as a community, as well as there's some additional posts that we've seen from some of the other designers too that we'll talk about. Of course, our week in Hearthstone, what decks we've been playing, maybe even Tavern Brawl. I think Toast even got a chance to play a Tavern Brawl today and talk about some events. Noxious just got back from the WESG. Got Trinity happening right now, too. And then Mechatorps got lots of cards, actually, from viewers, patrons, and Noxious has got a load of cards today. And then going to end with Q&A. Lots of email questions, which has been great. So keep sending those email questions to valuetown@chamanv.tv, and we'll try to read them out every week. But let's start with, oh, yes, nothing like the good old phone. let's start with
professional
developers.
Professional podcast.
Exactly, dun, dun, holy dun. Shit. Man. But developers insight, we had Ben Brode and Ixar do a live stream, which is like freaking amazing because we've been, you know, I think most of the community has been wanting that for a long time now. So it was actually great to get a chance for them to schedule that and actually have it happen. So did you guys get a chance to watch it live or
not?
You watched the box or anything?
I watched like towards the end live where they talked about like I think inconsistency was something they talked about. They talked about like pirates, yeah. Shamans a bit. Yeah, but very, very cool initiative that they took. They did a live QA, right? So they actually picked questions from like social media live and answered them.
Yeah.
Which is a bit different from in the past where Ben Brode put, apparently, according to him, he sets up in his house after he puts his son to bed. And then, like, gets the lighting all set up and sits there and then record it. Because I thought it was, like, he's doing it at Blizzard with, like, professional sure. setups, like, everything prepared for him. But apparently it's, like...
Yeah. Who knew Ben was so much like us? You know, all of us, or especially me and Noxious. Put the kids to bed. Let's do some YouTube videos, guys.
That's exactly what it is. Like,
our
that's
life.
The life of just about any guy
life.
With kids that tries to do stuff on the internet. That it's just really, really difficult. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but I agree.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
that's what it is when you're a dev too. He feels like he has a responsibility to do it too, which makes it even more difficult to manage, because he feels pressured to get it done. So,
yeah. I mean, so I agree. I thought it was at the Blizzard headquarters. Thought it was, you know, just kind of more of a, I guess, a priority, or and then you know something that the whole team planned. But it turns out it was just mostly Ben, you know, wanting to do it on the side, and that's. Kind of how it worked and the editing of it. You know, he's probably like how we all started, not much of a video editor. And I mean, I can't believe that. Where's the Blizzard video editor, right? Like you would think Ben just hands it to this guy and he just makes it into a video for him. but it kind of sounded that Ben was doing that too on top of it.
Well, and the big thing too, the big thing really that matters is that Ben Bro does not, or he mentioned that he didn't want jump cuts, right? And that's a big deal, because if you don't want jump cuts, then a video editor is mostly useless, since you really don't get much besides just a one take thing. And if that's the approach he wants to go with, then it's going to take, you know, a few takes to maybe get it done without jump cuts. Yeah. But ultimately, he can do it alone. It's a very, you know, one take vlogger.
It's not that he can't do it alone. That's not really the question. It's why is he doing? I mean, like, I would, you know, Ben just doing it in one take, that's fine. You know, I can understand that. You want to do it in one take, cool.
Sure.
But he should just hand it to somebody and somebody just makes it for him. It sounded like he was literally the initiative in doing everything, you know, for this video just to get it out there to the community. And that was the part that surprised me.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm honestly, I've always felt like Ben Broad was the kind of guy who would actually try to get the, he feels like the lifeblood of Team 5 in many ways, in terms of how much initiative he's willing to put in. Just talking to him whenever we get a chance, we got a chance. He cares a lot about the game, and it's really obvious. And so I'm not really surprised by that, right? Like, the question you're bringing up really is, why wasn't this something the team planned for in, you know, before the need came up, right? Why wasn't this something that was, you know, at the very early days of Hearthstone? All right, guys, what's your PR plan for this game? Here's the strategy. We're going to have designer insights. But that wasn't a thing. So, you know, they kind of had to come up with it on the fly. And that's what we ended up with for a long time.
Yeah, well, the good news is that it sounds like it's going to be, you know, a priority now, which is great.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably see a lot more of these live streams, or at least these live developer insights, and that's kind of cool. Definitely great. Actually, it's not even kind of cool. It's just really, really good, and I think most of the community, you know, was happy, obviously, that they did that. But let's talk about the contents of which they talked about, because they covered all kinds of things. So this is one of those general developer insights, questions from Arena and Wild and new player experiences, and just so everything across the board. So if I'm going to go through this Reddit thread, this one person on Reddit, I think his name is, I guess it's Team Cabal, or no, it's Gaming Dude. He summarized a lot of these things pretty well, so I figured we'd just go through it. They started with the new experience, so they really, a new player experience. So they talked a lot about that. They, you know, they touched on just kind of, you know, I guess what players typically do, go through the tutorial, then usually go to the casual and AI. And, you know, one of the biggest topics right now is just how terrible the new player experience is, especially trying to get into ranked. And no question, you know, I don't think anybody in the community will question that. It's very tough. It's tough for somebody new to come in and even know what to do. And they talked a little bit about how the matchmaking works for it and everything, and just a summary of just how ranked worked and what's good and what's not. But one thing they did talk about is just the grindiness, I guess, of the ladder too. So why don't we touch on both of those things? First off, the new player experience. They didn't really go into too much detail as to how they're going to fix that necessarily. You know, that's, you know, they didn't talk about, you know, things like, I don't know, even things like recipes that they've talked about before, right? Recipes are obviously a very clear thing for new players and helping with that. What do you guys think, just in general, new player experience and what they talked about or what they didn't talk about there?
Well, I mean, I don't know what a new player goes through, right? They mentioned, like, the thing is, they mentioned, like, new players get a different matchmaking pool.
Mm-hmm.
At the start, like, both based on collection, I think, yeah. Ben Bro, or one of the designers, mentioned, like, they actually look at your collection to try and match up against players who also don't have that big of a collection, which I thought was great, right? Because the last thing you want is a, you know, day one new player going up against legendaries in ladder. But
yeah, even at rank 25, I mean, people like having legends.
But it's like, I'd be very curious to see exactly how the whole thing works. Like, at what point does Blizzard decide, okay, this guy is ready for, you know, the big time. Let's just toss him into the regular matchmaking. And then, you know, you go from very little, you know, opponents with legendaries, and now everyone's running Patches, everyone's running Kazakas, everyone's running, you know, it's like, it's hard. It's like, a lot of, you know, content creators don't really talk about the new player experience unless, you know, people are making a big deal about it, because it's something they don't experience. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what a new player goes through. It's only when, you know, people are rioting on Twitter or Reddit, it's like, oh, suddenly let me talk about that new play experience. But yeah, I don't know.
But it's really interesting because I feel like the experience level, you know, of or the player experience is kind of broken into three different things. It's like new player experience, returning player experience, and then like just us, you know, people who've just been playing the game just the entire time. And I think we can kind of understand the second one, which is like people returning, you know, just when they have some kind of collection. But yeah, the new player experience is something that I think all of us are possibly too far removed. But, you know, trying to imagine what they would need, definitely something in the ranking ladder needs to change, you know, just to help with that. Like, yeah, they do put these folks in a special bucket for like about 10 games. It's kind of like Arena, you know, like the first three games are Arena, or until you get past three wins or whatever it is, you know, you're playing against literally just this pool of all kinds of different players, and including a lot of, you know, not so great players. Right. And it sounds like they're doing something like that with the brand new folks straight out of the AI, you know, playing the AI. But yeah, there's no good place to put a person directly into the rank, you know, just the ladder. I guess there's an algorithm to match up whether the guy has cards or not. But even if, let's just say they just don't have cards, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're coming into rank 25, you're eventually going to be put in a position that you play against people with cards. And there's only 25 ranks. You know, I think that's one thing they should consider, like, creating. And, I mean, we can go on. They definitely talk about, what they can do better. But I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on just the new player experience before we jump into that. So, Noxious, what do you think?
I've actually made a video about this because I was, you know, people in the chat kept bringing it up. And, you know, actually, no, they kept bringing up other stuff that had nothing to do with the new player experience. And it was stuff that's... like the metagame sucks, everything's bad. And then they mentioned, well, you know, Blizzard is greedy with standard. They don't want me to keep my old collection cards. They want to rotate, you know, evergreen stuff out of the game and into wild, and they want to leech my money and everything. And the truth of it is, like, I understand where they're coming from, but they're really conflating two issues, right? One of which is, well, I have these cards that I can't use anymore, which is a problem in and of itself, or not even a problem, but a fact once rotations happen. And the fact that card acquisition is too slow, right? So to me, the new player experience is really dictated by how fast you can catch up. It's got nothing to do with which cards you had that you can't use anymore. I mean, that's more to do with, like, if you're older and you've, you know, played Force of Nature Savage Roar forever and then they nerf it, that sucks a little bit. But it's not a case of the game sucking and trying to leech you out of your money. The truth of it is, people just don't get cards fast enough in Hearthstone. Like, you want to catch up, it takes fucking forever. And that's true of most free-to-play games. And this is one of the gripes I have with the term, I guess, free-to-play, which should probably be something like free-to-try. As for the most part, you get to try the game, and it's really fucking awesome. Like, Hearthstone's great. First few games you have as a new player, I can tell you from having watched my wife go through that process, having watched friends go through that process, they fucking love it. It's great. But then they hit that brick wall, which is usually, I think, when, you know, they go into ranked for the first few times. When, well, okay, what can I really build with this card pool that I have, right? What with the basic card pool can I come up with in terms of synergy? And they quickly find out that, okay, they make a Beast Hunter. That's an obvious one. They make an all-spell mage. That's an obvious one. They make Inner Fire Priest. Then they make Enrage Warrior. Then they make Charge Warrior. They try, like, all these different types of builds with just the basic card pool. And they quickly figure out which ones are bad and which ones are good. They make, of course, the Almighty Taunt deck that everybody makes. You know, the first one of the first few decks they make. At some point, though, they're looking for, like, more refined synergies. And when they see them, right, like, they get somebody up against them playing, like, let's go back to, like, the Mech Mage days. And the guy just goes, like, Mech Warper, play, like, Annoyotron. And just go, like, spam the board. And then they realize they died to that. They're like, holy shit, that was cool synergy. This Mech Warper, the guy held the coin and played it. Getting to do that is actually not that easy if you don't have a big collection. For instance, I want to make a Jade Golem deck. No Air Black Paw? I'm shit out of luck, probably. I want to make a Pirate Aggro deck right now. No patches. Sure, I can climb, but it's going to be a lot worse than if I had it. And all those synergies tend to be gated behind paywalls because they tend to be more complex, and that's where the devs want complexity to be in higher, you know, rarity levels. So, to me, that's what the new player experience boils down to, is I feel like legendaries matter too much as a new player. I don't feel that way. I mean, I could probably play like a cheap deck, but the new player feels that way.
Yeah, and a lot of that, what you said is, I mean, completely true. But a lot of that is focused on, you know, how the new player compares, you know, to the other folks on ladder. Sure. You know, and so I think ladder is totally tied into this conversation. And
yeah, it has to.
Yeah, so why don't we talk about the ladder portion? So they pointed out, you know, things like what's not working well, or what is working well is that it's very easy to understand. You know, we have 25 ranks, we get X number of stars to be promoted to the next rank, and then you get into legend, and that then they have its own ranking system in legend. So yes, that's definitely easy to understand, and that's definitely good. What's not working is it's super grindy, and it only lasts 30 days too. It's like a single month too. And maybe the single month isn't so much something that's not working, but definitely grindiness. Every time we finish a season, we have to restart at rank 15, even if you're like number one legend, still have to start at rank 15. So they address that by, or at least not address it, but they pose the question to us. So how do we make it better? And they suggested a few things. So one thing is increasing the number of bonus stars, you know, each time, you get on a streak, and maybe even carrying it on just even further than rank 5. I think that was maybe not explicitly said, but it was implied, I think, when I was listening to it. Maybe have a breaking point, you know, kind of like Overwatch has, you know, your career high or your season high, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe similar to that. So once you clear 15, once you clear 10, once you clear 5, you can't go below it. So it's a little bit different than Overwatch, because you can actually drop below it SR wise.
But your overall rank go into a higher rank on the following season.
Well, I mean, your status is still what your highest was. And then also, let's see, what other? Actually, that's most of the things that they suggested. And then they talked about some of the good and bad things, which, you know, you might have too many people. If you give too many bonus stars, you have too many people in legend, and they want that to still be an achievement to get to legend and things like that. But what do you guys think about those suggestions?
So I like the gated one, because right now, like every 30 days, like streamers, like, you know, like myself, you know, we go back to rank 17, right? And we want to hit legend. I think all streamers, you know, kind of want to hit legend, just so, you know, it's something like, for me, hitting legend is a chore that I have to do every month.
Yep.
Because if I don't have that little orange crystal at the bottom corner, like when people watch me, it's like, oh man, he's not even legend. He's a bad player.
I know exactly what that is. Yeah.
Getting legend itself isn't a huge display of skill. Like, yes, you have to like understand the game pretty well to be able to hit legend consistently, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not a better player just because I had legend. Like when I had legend, I didn't suddenly become, you know,
Improved. Like you just haven't gotten better than the past season.
Exactly.
That's what bothers me the most. I think you're right.
So it's something I have to do, even though it doesn't really mean that much. And it is a grind. Like I'm at rank 3 and it's like, I want to play Fundax. I want to play, you know, OTK Priest. Yeah. I want to play Hunter or Paladin. But I know if I play, I'm going to drop down to rank 6. And even though I'm having fun doing it, it just means I have to try hard even more down the line to get to legend again. So, like, for me, I like the idea of having, like, breakpoints. But another thing is, I wonder if they should add, like, another rank beyond legend. Because right now, legend goes up to 10,000 on EU server, right? I think it'd be cool.
Super legend. Probably,
yes, something like that. It's probably unbeatable because the difference between top 100 legend and bottom 100 legend is like a whole, like, it's a huge gap. But that's not really captured in terms of just, you know, legend rank. But that's probably another discussion.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's a minor thing. I think you could easily do that. Top 100 legend, just have something else.
Yeah, I don't think it would be too hard to, like, add the elite section of legend, for instance. Like, actually, you could call it elite if you wanted, really. The point is, like, adding more ranks is a solution, but one of the problems is, again, it's a card game, and the moment you add a ranking system in a card game with the RNG that's inherent, I feel like you can't add drop-offs to those elite ranks, because, like, the breaking points where there's no threshold where you can't drop below it, because then it becomes way too easy for there to be fluctuations where someone gets there and then, oh, hey, they're stuck in that top 100. Like they secure a spot in there because they had their good streak before other people. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's kind of annoying about ranking system in card games is that, yeah, over time it does even out, but in the immediate sense, it doesn't feel like you're really improving. It's kind of rare. Like honestly, like the few times I've learned something about Hearthstone is when I've actually sat down and watched the game. I learned more by watching Hearthstone and replays of pros while casting than I actually do playing. Mm-hmm. I've done more watching than playing Hearthstone, and that's just, you know, a testament to how
a
little
lot of people,
you know,
do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean, is like the how little grinding the ladder really does for you. It helps a lot, you know, if you want the HCT points, if you want to get practice in, you know, get multiple hours. Of course you're going to be better by getting more practice in, but the truth of it is there are a lot of legend players that don't put in that many hours because what they do is they simply watch more and analyze their replays and just get there quick because they don't make mistakes. And because it's because the grinding system is so time consuming, it actually plays against the type of puzzle dynamic that I think Hearthstone wants you to engage in, which is, mm-hmm. hey, this game is a puzzle. You want to get the best possible, you know, statistically viable play every single time. But to do that the best of your ability, you have to sink a lot of time in analyzing games as opposed to playing them. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's
yeah, I know what you mean by that. Yeah, I would like to see something that's kind of just with a little bit of both of what you guys have said. I would like to see career and season highs.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you did season highs, then the top 100, I mean, you still have a real top 100, but, you know, you don't have people just squatting in top 100 like you were suggesting, Noxious. So they can drop out of top 100, but at least you have your career high. You have that symbol you can show to your, you know, your audience if you're a streamer or, you know, whatever it is, right? Like you have that kind of achievement. And when it comes down to it, that's what all of this should be to the average player, Hearthstone. It's like the average player isn't a legend player, right? They're trying to achieve the next level. And right now the next level is like, okay, I'm going from rank 17 to rank 16. And like, that just doesn't feel like anything. You know what I mean? It's literally a number that's higher. And then, okay, there is like a little icon that's a little different, but do we really know the icons for rank 20 through 10 off the top of your head?
No,
exactly. Okay. Okay. No, you're not supposed to spend that much time, Noxious. Like if you don't know,
I just
don't
like can't. I couldn't
right,
tell
right.
you. I just couldn't.
Yeah. So I would like to see them do the bronze, silver, gold, you know, platinum, diamond thing. Like it's worked for so many of their other games, you know, Blizzard, like, and other, you know, dev titles too. Why not do it here?
Yeah, that also reminds me, like the season reset where every high level player goes back to 17.
God,
yeah.
Like
yeah, that's just
like
what the
like
hell.
Like new players don't know that. They're like, hey, it's January 2nd. Let me try this new Hearthstone game. It's like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on?
What have you done to yourself, dude?
It's like, oh, that's a cool card back. I wonder how you get it. Oh, hell legend. Okay.
Yeah, you know the best thing is like they start on like the 29th. And then they're like, this game's pretty fucking awesome. They get on the first, oh, your rank is reset. Like, oh, I didn't really, that changed nothing for me. You know, I went from 23 to 25. And then they eventually just climb back up. They have more time that weekend. And then they end up in like rank 19. They're like, oh, this game is great. You know, I climbed from 25 to 19 now. And it's just like fucking patchers time now. Like the beginning of the season just hit. And they're just completely mind blown as to what's going on.
Well, here's an interesting question for you. Because I've always felt that, yeah, you know, I feel like legend folks should just start at rank 5. And I think general consensus, that's probably what people would like to see. But as a streamer, what do you guys think? I mean, you know, the nice thing about actually resetting and starting over is that, you know, traversing yourself back up the ladder is actually, so, you know, something that you can do as a streamer. You know, sometimes you just don't know what to do as a streamer. You know, you're like, what should I do today? Well, at the beginning of every month, it's very clear the first week or first 3 to 5 days, you just, you know, climb yourself back up to whatever. So how do you feel about that?
That's definitely a valid point. It's like something to do, something to essentially, I guess, show off your Hearthstone knowledge. I know Hidden Legend, like I've said, it's not like a huge achievement, but it's like you can try hard a little bit and say, okay, be serious about playing one. And there's like a counter. It's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, legend.
Yeah.
But so there's two ways you can kind of do it. You can stay in the rank 10s, the teens, and play fun decks and play against fun decks. One thing hard about playing fun decks in Legend is even though you're playing the fun deck, your opponent's just going to patches you. It's going to, you know, he's not going to try to have fun with you. He's going to kill you as hard, try hard as he can.
Right.
But if you stay in the ranked teens, it's like your opponents are either newer or they more casual, or they're playing fun decks as well, which is why, you know, they're...
Well, that's the hope. I found that to be untrue of recent memory. Yeah, yeah, I swear, like, unless you're ranked 19, like, the moment you hit, like, 17, it's net decks all the way up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, it's gotten really toxic in terms of having... It's been like this for a while, actually. Yeah. Like, every day I get the question on Twitter or, you know, through Gmail or whatever. Somebody's asking, hey, when are you playing Randuin next, right? Like, the random priest deck that I used to run with mind games and everything. Yeah. And the only response I can give them is, I'm not playing it anymore because there is literally zero deck that I beat with this. There is not a single deck that doesn't tempo me down. Even Reno decks will tempo it. Like, that's what I mean. There's nothing left for that deck to even have fun with. And, you know, beyond that, you know, there's also the fact that RNG is a lot less fun after you've had, you know, an actual competitive meta with Yogg and Pile of the Shredder. But it's...
I mean, you could argue you're supposed to play in casual for stuff like that.
Well, but the thing is, casual still sees people practicing. And a lot of the decks that you see there are still... Like, let's say a Murloc deck, right? Some people build a Murloc deck and go to casual, and it's still a tempo deck that shits on, you know, Randuin Rin, because as new expansions come out, the power level of cards is going up, and that deck is using only old cards, and none of the fun new cards actually have stat lines worth of shit. So it's not like we were given, like, an ETC to play with, right? Like, a new fun card is Draconid Operative, but it fits in a shell that's just the driest, most boring thing ever. So you have, like, one fun card in the entire deck.
I think Gadget Zan introduced a meta that's very focused on the new cards.
Yeah.
If you look at everything right now, it's pretty much your deck either has a Kazakus or it has
it's the 6-0. It's a 6-0 diagram.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no chart.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're either playing Kazakus or you're playing Patches. And these are new cards from the new latest expansion. Like, but it's the last expansion of the year. Usually it's at this point where decks become super refined, like, you know, Shaman, you know, Whispers of the Old Gods, they, you know, got Flameless, Faceless, Flame Wreath, Faceless, and Thing from Below, you know, their power level goes up. They then get Spirit Claw and Maelstrom, their power level goes up. Now they're getting the Jade package and the Pirate package. So, like, it's
they're about to lose, like, half of that stuff, but...
Yeah, Tunnel Trog and Totem Golem rotates out in April, which I'm really excited for, because it's, like, it's a whole new meta shift. But it's just right now, a lot of the focus is on the new set, and the worst decks are not the worst deck, but the strongest deck are very optimized right now, so everyone's just playing them. So if you try to have fun, it's really tough.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the current meta, because in order, sequentially, they actually talked about Arena, but let's talk about the current meta since you kind of brought it up. So they touched on just the pirate decks. They basically said that the numbers do show that there are very high numbers of it, and but it did drop off a bit from the very first few weeks, where we saw literally pirate warrior after pirate warrior. Then it turned into shaman warrior or shaman pirate, sorry. And now with the Kazakus decks and the Reno decks starting to keep those in check, you know, we're seeing a little bit less of it, but it's still more popular than they'd like. And that discussion really pointed out that, you know, they really look at just frequency, you know, of decks, and that is an issue that they see. So not only is it powerful, and usually when it's powerful, it's popular, right? But if it is in this rare case where it's not, even if it's not that powerful, but it's super popular, that's still not a good thing in their eyes.
Yeah, they're right. A meta shift. At the start, it was just Pirate Warrior. I don't see that much Pirate Warrior. But now it's been Aggro Shaman. So they're right in the sense that, you know, things change and you shouldn't just rush out. It's like, after 2 weeks of Gadget Zan, you know, they didn't rush out to nerf patches because of Pirate Warrior. Yeah. But I definitely do agree it's like...
But they were surprised. How popular Pirate, or at least how many classes were playing Pirates after this. Yeah.
I think you can expect Warrior to play. You can expect Rogue to kind of play because they have the hero power and Swashburglar. But when Shaman, with no Pirates, like, oh, wow, I'm just going to stick small-time Buccaneer into my deck.
Right.
I don't run any
Paladins
other Pirate.
Too, yeah.
I'm just get that in there because so strong. It's like... I guess there's some of them run South Sea Deccan, but...
Oh, yeah, you do see South Sea Deccan, but the point is their class has nothing to do like nothing at all to do with pirates, right? Ever. And somehow like they're finding room for it, which is kind of the point you're bringing up. And I think that's where Blizzard maybe didn't anticipate that it would come out, you know, as strongly as it did. But, you know, to go back to the problem that it's causing is, like, once shamans lose their own class-specific aggro package of Trog Totem Golem, like, that pirate package is good, don't get me wrong, but it's not nearly as impressive because they won't have it every time as frequently as, you know, rogues have with the Splash Burglar on top of the pirate package, warriors with Nazoth's First Mate. Like shamans just don't have anything else than the neutral one. So they'll have, like, a lower frequency of it once the rotation hits, and I think that might even things out. It should even things out quite a bit. Like, it's not even that it might, it probably will.
They'll still be good. It's just they won't be ridiculously good. Like, the way that they are right now. Yeah. They went on. Yeah, so the both of them went on to talk about Paladin and Hunter, too, and just answering questions about. Right now, it feels like Paladin and Hunter are in a bad spot in the meta. They're just not fast enough to deal with the pirates. They don't partake in the pirates so much. Paladins do. I've definitely seen some pirate paladin, but for them, definitely hunters don't partake in it just because they don't have a cheap enough weapon. And what's the state of those two classes? And their answer was, right now, pirates seem to be, you know, I guess keeping them down, suppressing those two classes. But they think that in the future, once the pirate decks do subside, then hunter and paladin will come back. What do you guys think? You think that will happen? I mean, you think Hunter will come back?
I mean, it's really hard to say, right? It really depends on what they introduce. But, I mean, you can say that about any deck. It's like, well, let's see what the next expansion brings. I'm sure things will change. And I am sure things will change. But yeah, Paladin. So I played like 50 games to Legend from rank 5. I didn't face a single Paladin or Hunter. Not a single. Out of 9.
It's crazy.
Not a single one.
I'm surprised
one.
You didn't remember Paladin. Paladins, you know, even Murloc Paladins were around, at least in the beginning, but not so much now.
But, yeah, like some people, you know, think about Call of the Wild. They say, okay, what if you unnerf Call of the Wild to 8?
Like that's going to help. Like, it's, I don't know. I don't think that would do anything.
Yeah, it's really hard to say, but yeah. Pirates is too fast, and Hunter, you know, Before Gadget's End, they were pretty good. Secret Hunter was a really strong deck. But it's surprising how, you know, even though they lost nothing, they can get completely phased out. But yeah, I mean, some classes always have to be on the bottom, right? Hunter has its time. You know, in Karazhan, Secret Hunter was good. I kind of feel bad for Paladin because it's been a long time since... It's been since Mysterious Challenger that they had a decent deck. Control Nazoth was okay. Murloc Paladin's okay. I mean, right now, someone's winning with Murloc Paladin at tournament right now. The Trinity series, I think Thais went 5-0 with it.
That's crazy.
It's a really good deck. Like, people just complain about Paladin. The only class I would complain about is Hunter. Like, complaining about Paladin right now, it's okay. I mean, I won't argue it, but I think Hunter is in a much worse state for many more reasons than... You know, just the
pirate. Yeah. I mean, they brought up Paladin Hunter mostly because of the hand buffing, right? That's the big thing they got out of this expansion. And yeah. Currently, like, we're not even seeing it. So it's just like somewhat of a way. It's like Inspire like in some ways. We're not even seeing these things even being used. So, you know, they're mostly wondering whether it'll come back and or they'll be able to present themselves. I don't know if they will. Like, the pirates have to subside, it's just too fast. Like, maybe give Hunter a cheap weapon and they can play Pirates too, and then all of a sudden they can kick in.
That's what you don't want to do, right? Like, you don't want to homogenize the meta even more.
Yeah,
like, one of the things is Pirates already, like, Hunter has, like, you know, I presented you that deck early in the expansion where I showed you, you know, very minion-centric deck with Scavenging Hyenas. That thing just destroyed people. Like, it just completely tore them apart. Unless they were playing a pirate package. And that was the big issue. Like, you struggled against Reno decks a little bit, but it was less of a problem. And one of the things that, you know, killing the pirate package off, if it were to ever happen, which I doubt it will, what that does is it actually frees up a lot of room for something like Jade Druid to come up. Mm-hmm. And if Jade Druid comes up, then Hunter can just be like, okay, time to come out and play. Because I can actually do pretty well against the Druid deck, for instance, as Hunter. You'll just curve them out, get a good dispatch code on curve, kill their Jade stuff, and you just snowball, and you kill them before they get to stabilize, like you've always done. Like, Hunter's always done that, besides, like, the Malygos era with Arcane Giant. So, I don't know if things would change that much, but I could definitely see Hunter being good if Pirate Package just subsides a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
It'd have to be gone. Like, literally just gone for it to be, like, Pirates to be gone.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if you nerf the package enough, Hunter's actually got a pretty good pace. Like, the curving of the deck of the hand buff is actually just fucking fine. It's just not broken.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
The pacing of its curve is just perfectly okay. It's just not all, like, way over the top, and that's why it looks like it's a weak thing.
Yeah, I mean, they got some really, like, decent cards in the gadgets.
Trog
Beast Rager, Dispatch Kodo, Shaky Zip Gunner, Rat Pack.
It's all
nice cards, but somehow they are not being played, which is...
Well, they're not being played because they just can't even get them out. Like, you know, it's... Everything's just too fast. And then by the time, you know, your opponent has tempo, then those cards just don't even have, enough impact anyways on the game. And... Those cards, like the cards that they came out with Hunter, were good like a year ago. You know what I mean? Like, they would have been great, like, in the game, I think, a year ago, and fantastic for Hunter. And Hunter would just be probably incredibly strong. But currently, they're just not quick enough. And the buffing's not as good as the Paladin ones are either. Even though they're nice single minion buffs and you can tempo it out. I mean, we got Kazakus decks out there. You know, like, they just... eliminate all of those cards fairly easily, even with a 5-mana potion. So it's just not quite strong enough. They're not bad, it's just that they're not strong enough by, you know, like, on the standards of, like, the other cards, like you were saying.
I also want to talk about turn 2 Doomsayers and how often they get killed in this meta.
Yeah.
Turn 2 Doomsayers? Oh, God.
It drives me insane, because
it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
Like, I'm okay if you kill Doomsayers with, like, Shadow Word Pain or Crazed Alchemist, right? Because, you know, you're using a tech to beat it, or, like, you're using up a card, or you're losing some tempo to counter a Doomsayer. But it's, like, against Pirate Shaman, it's, like, they don't miss a beat. It's, like, okay, instead of 7 damage that was going to do anyway to your face, I'm just going to do to the Doomsayer. I don't have to use a card. I don't have to, like, you know, play suboptimally. I'm just redirecting that damage to your face. So, you know, a 2-mana 7 heal is not bad, but it does nothing for the board. And in the past, it's like turn 2 Doomsayer. Like, if you coin it out, it's like the safest play you can possibly do to, like, ensure your opponent does not have anything. It's like coin turn 2 Doomsayer. It's very inefficient. It's very premature, but my God, I need to stop my opponent. But even now, that's not enough anymore. It's like, if your opponent plays, like, a Celsi, they can, like, get Patches, Celsi, Fling Tongue for 7 damage. Or, you know, they turn one Small-Time Buccaneer into War Axe, 7 damage. It's
very common. It's, like, 30%, 40% of the time. Maybe, like, 25%, something like that. Like, they can remove it, and it's just like, wow, I mean, this is exactly what Doomsayer was made for. And we can't remove it? Seriously? This is crazy. Yeah. I know your pain, man. That's great. It's... seems wrong, you know, like, so the only real way to keep it intact is to remove it, you know, to have your weapon that kills it, or have your lightning bolt or your smite or whatever it is, right?
Like, when my opponent uses a lightning bolt on it, it's like, okay, that's fair, he used
a that's
card.
Fine, but yeah, when he develops a board on top of it, that's when I just get triggered.
Exactly.
Yeah, I actually get triggered.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm fucking done here, I'm out.
Okay, well, let's move on. They talked about Arena a little bit, and they're gonna add top 100 rankings in February. Thank God.
Oh. Just before we move on to the whole Reno thing, I think Paladin right now, aside from the Anyfin deck, which is very obvious, it actually has, like, decent hand buff decks you can make, but no one's giving them credit, and I don't know why they're getting so little attention. Like, you can actually make you can easily make a hand buff deck that'll get you a legend with Paladin. It's just people build that stuff so wrong. It's like, Actually, I should have probably brought a list that I made, but it's like that type of deck is good. You can build it control, you can build it more mid-range, you can bring back stuff like Argent Commander. Like, you can actually make something of that archetype.
Yeah.
No one's really willing to give it a shot, and they just pretend like nothing. Well, actually, no, they don't know that it works because they actually don't know how to deck build, so they net deck and bitch and doesn't. That's exactly what's happening with that archetype.
Yeah.
People are waiting for somebody to spoon-feed them like an actual functional deck. I'm not saying it's tier one.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's tier one and it's gonna win you tournaments. I'm just saying that deck will get you to legend. And if you can't do it, then it's not because the deck has no potential. It's just not a deck you've come up with yet.
We should bring one next week to look at.
By the complaints about Pally.
I mean, I've tried hand buff Pally. But it's really, you really have to plan out your buffs. It's like, don't just play, you know, Smuggler's Run straight up turn one for the buff. You have to, like, wait for the right cards and the right moments and the right buffs. So, like, it's probably a bit more complicated than your average deck because, you know, it's based on hand buffing. If you're hand buffing now, you're not hand buffing, you know, maybe a Doppelgangster you're running or Fight Promoter, but you get more curve out and it's like you have to play so, optimally.
Yeah, you definitely do.
It's good to run the, I mean, I've seen versions with the Pirates even in the beginning too, just to kind of get you started, and then gives you some time to get into the mid game also.
So I have like two general approaches to that hand buff deck, which I'll touch on and then we'll move on from that point, because without deck list, it's kind of futile. Is either you build it to be more like aggressive / mid-rangey and you put the Smuggler's Runs, or you put it, you build it control, and then you cut out the Smuggler's Runs, you put in stuff like Doomsayers in the early game, and you still play the Grimmstreet Enforcer and the Outfitter. So you really have four hand buff cards. Going all in on the hand buff seems kind of, it's not like a Jade deck. Mm-hmm. You know, a Jade deck just kind of compounds itself further and further the more of it you put, but that deck, like that mechanic, doesn't need you to just shove everything in. Like, it never tells you that. Jade Golem is kind of a requirement. You have anything Jade, just shove it in. And it's going to probably do good. But that deck, if you put all the hand buff, you'll run out of good stuff to buff in the first place and out of control tools and out of removal. So there's like a fine balance to it. So I like the control list a bit more, where you don't play the Smuggler's Run and instead you play Doomsayers and stuff. But there's the other route where you play stuff like Worgen Infiltrator and, you know, actually try to get counter pirate play without the pirate package yourself. Maybe in slashing, like slapping an Argent Lance, which I thought like was just the best card for Paladin's expansion.
Yeah.
Most underrated card for this expansion for Paladin by far. And you just see no one playing it. And it's really just people not having a net deck to go to at this point. That's what I think.
Yeah, I've been experimenting. Like last night I played with a Pirate Dragon Paladin just to get a feel for that. I've definitely tried buff Dragon before in Paladin, but it's always the beginning. The beginning is the hardest part to traverse. Like once you get past the beginning, then you got legitimate chances to just flood the board and overwhelm your opponent with just some ridiculously sized minions, which is like really, really fun when you pull it off. But just figuring out what to do in the beginning. And I honestly, like, I think Argent Lance is great with the pirate package. Like I've had a lot of success with that recently.
Okay, with the pirate package. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, it works.
I haven't been able to really run the pirate package in Pally. Like I've had a lot of trouble with it.
It just takes four cards. It's like it's five cards or something, right?
But you need a lot of weapons for it to really do anything in that deck.
Yeah, four. I mean, it's not terrible in that sense, but it's mostly just to combat, you know, just their pirates. It's not for you to gain crazy tempo, because you will gain tempo mid-range if you're buffing stuff, right? So been trying a few of those things. I wouldn't say it's like a ton of success or not, but it's not bad. By no means is it bad. So I feel like it is tweakable to be something climbable, you know, to legend at least.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Well, let's see. Moving on, we've been spending a lot of time here. Maybe we just fly through the rest of these. So Arena, so they're going to be adding a leaderboard, like top 100. Thank goodness. I think a lot of us have been wanting that, just to see who the actual top Arena players are, and they can get a chance to work for that. That's really cool. 30-run requirement, too. So I think that's enough. 30 is good. But in terms of, I guess, just the meta of the Arena, I feel like it's in a pretty good spot. They just talked really briefly about making it a little bit more like Standard and possibly just going to a Standard card set. Maybe just touch a little bit on this. Like, what do you guys think of that? Would you like to see Arena in Standard or with Standard card set?
So, like, I'm not a big Arena player. recently. Like I've played a few runs, but like my feeling is that you don't really play around anything besides like very specific cards,
right.
Like turn seven flame strike or turn seven invisible force. Most time you're just playing, you know, optimally, you're making smart trade, you know, smart curve value plays, right? Like there's no really things you have to think about. Like if they MC tech you or they like slam down a freaking death wing, it's like, okay, I'm not, it's arena. There's so many options. There's so many like wild cards out there. And there's going to be even more that it's really hard to really play around, which is fine. Like arena is a very different skill set from constructed, where it's more about game knowledge. Arena's more about like knowing good trades, you know, optimizing returns and, you know, value, which is fine. So I don't know if that's going to be like an amazing change, but that's one thing I noticed is that you don't play around that much stuff.
Yeah. What do you think, Noxious? Standard versus wild?
I don't care for standard arena, but I wouldn't mind if they changed what cards are allowed in, as opposed to making the whole thing a standard.
Yeah.
There's always the option of just, you know, we talked about that like in my wish list, but I would love to see them expand on the arena system. I mean, sure, you would, you know, split the player base, but how about like an arena rotation every week, just like Tavern Ball? Like 1 week it's standard, the other week it's like you have exactly GVG and the other expansion or whatever. Like you actually shuffle the card pool every so often, maybe like every month because it's more reasonable. So you can specialize and maybe solve that expansion combination. Like what if I told you all you could get was, you know, GVG and the Grand Tournament and, you know, Classic Evergreen? That's different than having access to some of the new stuff and the newer sets. And suddenly, you know, the dynamic changes where if GVG is around, Paladin gets mini bot and Monster for Battle. Now we're talking, like, it's going to be high frequency.
Yeah.
And maybe that's enough to just make them top tier. And the same can happen with other expansions. Like, if Priest gets access to Onyx Bishop, Priest of the Feast, Potion of Madness, for instance, in a set, maybe that's a thing. Maybe that rotation is where they shine because the two most recent sets are available and not the older ones. So, you know, Mage loses a bunch of stuff and you have some of the really good cards in Priest still available. So that's one of the ways I would probably tackle it, to add diversity, because I think the Tavern Ball system of switching things up is magnificent. Like, that's one of the things I love most about it. It's just... everything's different. Every single time you go in, every single week, it's like, oh, I'll play a few games of this, and it's super different. For Arena, you can actually hardcore and get a different experience every month. That would be great. I think that would be
great. Actually, I think that's a very good suggestion, because there's nothing holding Arena to being the same thing, you know, like, unlike competitive Hearthstone, right? Like HCT, like, okay, the ranked has to be standard because HCT uses the ladder and, you know, it's all tied in. So of course it's hard to change anything about that. But yeah, with Arena, it is really in some ways no different than Tavern Ball. You could literally just switch it up as much as you want. And yeah, I think alternating back and forth would be nice. I would say one thing is nice about considering standard is that, you know, right now, I don't know what the crossover is between, you know, ranked play and arena players, but I feel like if you made it standard, it would be something that's a little bit easier to, or more accessible to the people that only play ranked, you know, because they would understand it a bit better. We're always talking about people, we always come into it thinking that everybody knows all the cards, like wild cards, but in reality, there are some new players that don't know any of the old wild cards. So when they go into Arena, it's literally like, what is this card? Like, I've never seen this card before.
Sludge Belcher.
Yeah, it's like, do I pick this? I have no idea. So there is some kind of accessibility there between the two modes, and I think that promotes Arena even more. You know, it might actually encourage folks to play Arena a bit more too. So that's one positive. Overall, I think, you know, Arena having its own little, you know, nuance and, you know, its own completely different environment is a good thing. So rotate the cards. That's definitely a good thing. And why don't we wrap up with trying to see if there's anything that really, really huge to talk about so that we can just move on. We spent a lot of time on this. I think that's about it. I mean, there's definitely a lot of little things that they did talk about, but we should move on since we have a lot of other things to talk about, or at least some other things. But, you know, definitely a good thing from Ben and Dean. Like, keep doing these, please. Like, because I think it was a success. And I suggested to them just over Twitter that it'd be nice if maybe the developer insights were done you know, a little bit more frequently, maybe twice a month, but specific to certain parts of Hearthstone so that you can really dive into it. You know what I mean? Like
it, arena.
Yeah. Just all whatever, arena, just meta balance or just, you know, whatever, you know, I think people would get like their questions answered thoroughly if we did that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if the problem with like doing it live and too frequently or too generally is that it's always going to be the same question every time. Like, yeah, they don't nerf. Let's say they don't nerf small time buck and patches until, you know, they don't plan to every week. Let's say they do that every week. People are going to ask the same question. And when you're nerfing patches, when you're nerfing patches. So yeah, I definitely agree. Like themed, like with a specific topic in mind, it would do a lot better. And you know, they don't actually have to do it live, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, me either. I don't think they do.
I think doing it live is not as good as doing it pre-recorded. Like live, you do get the, you know, questions straight up, and it's like it feels a bit more authentic, but it's also like they're very careful not to say anything that will
trigger people.
Right, so they're like I don't know,
they're
if they
much, much more
the
hesitant
size,
they're much more hesitant, and it can be awkward is what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, like, even if there's something that they can answer or, you know, they want to answer, they kind of have to be like, okay, maybe I should talk with PR first or something.
Yeah. What about this question? Can I really speak on this? Although, like, if you're Ben Brode, you probably have some degree of, you know, decision making that belongs to you at this point, you know, with the role that he's been assigned the team now. So I'm pretty sure it's fine. But yeah, talking to PR is another one of these considerations that they definitely have to keep in mind.
I'm really glad they did the first one live, though, because
yeah,
it just feels more, you know, intimate, I guess you could say, you know, something that we've been lacking. We've been having a disconnect with them. So I felt like, you know, doing it live is a little bit more, you know, connecting with us in a way. I don't think they have to do it live every single time, but that is one positive thing about doing it live. And it's not like, oh, they totally, like, you know, totally edited this thing out and they just, you know, made it sound like
exactly.
It's like going to be one of those Ben Bro videos that people edit anyways into him saying all kinds of freakish things.
So we like to feed on your tears as ladder experience climbing. Murlocs are awesome, and we really like awesome Murlocs, so we would like awesome Murlocs to kill you in one turn.
But keep doing it though. They just more communication, and it sounds like that's what they're planning on doing. Let's keep it going. All right, let's talk about our week in Hearthstone, and this is kind of where we talk about our decks that we've been playing, as well as you know, maybe a little bit of Tavern Brawl. But why don't we just jump into decks, and then if we have some time, we'll talk about Tavern Brawls. But wanted to talk about Toast. Actually, we'll have you talk about your genie in a bottle, Priest.
Oh,
which,
do it, man.
Yes, because I was actually watching you play it the other day, and it was a lot of fun. I felt like you were doing all right, too, with it.
I mean, I started 8-1, and then I kind of tapered down to 50% over, like, 60 games.
No. But,
so basically, this whole thing started where one of my viewers suggested a genie with potion madness interaction. So for those who don't know, you get charge if you play genie and you cast potion madness on an opposing minion, like genie gets charged. And I messed with the list a bit, but basically the idea is to instant kill your opponent by giving a genie charge.
That's awesome.
You don't cast Divine Spirit on your genie. You cast it on the minion you steal. So you're doubling up on divine, you're doubling up on inner fire. So it's really easy to hit those high damage marks. And Rage HS gave me a more refined list, and I was able to win a lot with it. So it's a lot of fun. A lot of times you get, you know, you don't have to win with the OTK combo. Sometimes you just win because on turn one, you have a 20-20 Norshad Cleric. Sometimes you win because your opponent plays a Dirty Rat, which is one of the best minions to steal Potion of Madness.
Yeah.
It's high health, right? It's like,
that card is nuts.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to kill your opponents with your own minions. And that's the funny thing. Like,
you evil man.
The crazy thing is, sometimes there's going to be a situation, if your opponent just press the pass button every single turn, he wins. Because everything, I only have Potion of Madness,
right?
Divine to Enterprise, like, please play something so I can kill you, because I got no minions. And, you know, they play a Thoris and it's like, ha, you just gave me lethal. I think the funniest thing to happen is I played Doomsayer and they silenced it. Oof. Which gave me lethal on board right away because I got double divine for 20 damage.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, people are probably wondering, best. Like, why is Emperor Thor's in lethal? Because Plant-sized potion allows you to take it with potion of madness. So there's like cool combos you can do.
Oh, yeah. Thinking of Doomslayer is the best. Like, it's.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of OTKs. The most coolest thing is the showing off the interaction between genie and potion, mm-hmm. which is something that a lot of people don't really know about because it's kind of obscure. It definitely gets wrecked by the super aggro decks.
Not sure. What does it
everything do? Does, though.
Yeah. But you have a really good chance to beat Reno stuff because they kind of, you know, they have to build up and they don't really play around 30 damage combos that much because they're teched for aggro as well. A lot of fun. Definitely try it out. Takes a while to get used to it, but
Yeah, and this deck has Circle of Healing, Inner Fire, Northshire Cleric, Pint-Sized Potion, Potion of Madness, Power Word Shield, One Confuse, Divine Spirit, Doomsayer, Loot Hoarder, Wild Pyro, Acolyte of Pain, Cabal, Talon Priest, Aconite Soul Priest, Genie, and Emperor Thorzan. So, it's a pretty concise deck, too. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. So definitely try that out for all the priest players out there looking for something that's not Dragon or Kazakus. This is definitely something to do.
Although I think Reno Priest is one of the most fun decks in the set. It's also one of the more underplayed of all the the Reno lists that are around. There's a lot of variants to play with that deck, which I like.
Yeah. Speaking of Reno, so I ended up bringing my own Reno Priest to talk about, and we've talked about Reno Priest some, of course, but I focus mostly on greed this time around because, it's so funny, and I talked a little bit about this last week, but when I go through the exercise, and I always do this too, it's literally like a weekly thing for me where it's like, okay, I'm just tired of playing, whatever meta decks. I'm just going to literally just build, I just want to just build a greedy deck. And when I go through that exercise, I'm always a little bit disappointed because I'm like, there's only so many Yseras that I can play, and Archsleep for Fom's not really, good enough. It is greedy, but in a way, it's not that great, too. Unlike Ysera, right? Just continues to make stuff for you over and over and over. And when I look at, when I push that 7+ button and I'm hoping for like all these amazing cards just because I don't give a shit about losing to like the early game, I'm actually a little bit disappointed every time, and I've gone through this in the past with Ramp Druid too, and it's just like, I don't even know what to add that's actually impactful, even if I were extremely greedy. So I kind of went through that same exercise again with Reno Priest and went through different iterations, but I felt like the most greedy one I could build was the Dragon one, just because Operative, in itself is greedy. Historian, of course, right, is super greedy too. Just basically ended up building like something that's pretty similar to your Dragon Reno, but I have youthful brewmaster in there just to get another third Kazakus, if you want.
That card is insane in Reno Priest. I actually had it in my first build. This expansion, that card just made its way naturally into the deck. But the more I played it, the more I realized aggro farmed it. So maybe you found a way to make that work.
I mean, aggro is gonna farm like a lot of these things,
Sure.
But, the dragon package itself is decent against it. At least the turns 3 and 4, just reacting to that. Turns 1 and 2, you still got to figure something out for that. But, overall, I think it's pretty fun. And it's not, like, godly awful either against, Shaman. So this has been pretty fun. Thought Steal, I just threw in there. Just, again, going major greed to see, what comes with that, and it actually hasn't been too bad, and it's super fun. I'm just one of those guys that has a lot of enjoyment playing Hearthstone with greedy stuff, so I just have to do this every once in a while. So give this a try. It's got again mostly your Reno package, but it's got Mind Control, Ysera, Confessor, Thought Steal, just naming some of the stuff that's a little different, and Brewmaster. Those are the main things. So kind of mix and match some stuff there. Noxious, you wanted to talk about a Jade Shaman.
Well, yeah, I haven't really been playing this exact list, but when the expansion came out, you know, we brought a few decks that we'd been playing onto the Value Town, and the only one that really stuck to me that I brought even twice already, so that's going to be the third time, is Jade Control Shaman. I mean, I love Control Shaman. It's no, it's nothing I'm you know, hiding from, but this specific, there are two lists, actually, that I brought. One of which runs the N'Zoth package, which I personally like a lot, and the other one doesn't run it. And focuses more on the Jade package with, you know, Manitai Totem as card draw. Both of these lists run double Evolve. Okay, so that's some food for thought. A lot of people said, Evolve was bad. I mean, Devolve. Double Devolve. And that card is essentially a hex. It's a mass hex in some cases. Can be better in others. It's just a really, really good card. It defeats 4 mana 7/7s. Negates the pirate package by forcing all the pirates to become 1/1s effectively, right? Mm-hmm. Small Time Buccaneer becomes a Wisp, or you know, the Murloc Tiny Fin. So there's really not much power there left after you've devolved the Shaman pirate board. And the best part about all of it is that you actually have ways to heal yourself with Healing Wave in the deck. Some lists run double Genie Water Speaker, some others run Hallow Zeal with Elemental Destruction or you know, any other combination of spells. But this one has N'Zoth, Aya Blackpaw, and White Eyes as Death Rattle package. That's it. Right? So if you look at the Death Rattle package of the list, it's literally Aya Blackpaw, White Eyes, and N'Zoth. And that is in the deck because they're simply trying to get an extra push aside from the Jade development, right, during the game. And what's fascinating about this is you find yourself in a deck where you have double Jade Lightning, double Jade Spirit, double Jade Chieftain, double Jade Claws to get already there 8 sources of Jade stuff. I have Blackpaw on top with the Death Rattle, you know, ends up being 10. And if you play with Bran, you can actually beat control decks with this. Usually that's been the struggle that this type of list ran through for Shaman is, how do I beat a control deck with, like a Reno deck with my, you know, Jade deck? Because Twisting Nether is a thing, and now that they have N'Zoth, they can actually replenish at the end of it, and if they play Bran Bronzebeard with Jade Claws and Jade Spirit on turn 9, they actually create 4 golems, because Jade Claws is a battle cry, even though it doesn't, you wouldn't think about it at first, it is a battle cry effect, so it triggers twice off of Bran, and that means that suddenly you spawn 4 Jade Golems at the end of a game against Control. They've probably used one AoE throughout the game because you had Jade stuff. They probably used another AoE on your N'Zoth comeback, and now you have a third wave, you know, very typical of a Shaman thing, where you just spawn a bunch of Jade Golems again, and that's when you usually win the game. And what helps this list more than ever before is the fact that who is running combo Reno Lock anymore? Like, most of them have cut it out. So what used to be the weakness of Jade Shaman, Jade Control, that is, was basically, well, I'm too slow, and they always get their OTK together, and I'm dead. Suddenly that's gone, and you find yourself in a very favorable spot against that one. So I'd say that if you want to play a good control deck right now that isn't just a Reno deck, I would say, you know, Shaman with control in mind is just one of the most solid things you could ever do. It's always been, but more so now than ever. It just doesn't lose very often to aggro. It's exceptional against it, so I'd recommend it.
Yeah, for sure, lately, I think we've seen the rise of Jade Shaman more and more, like, even in the metagame, you know, like, it's because the Reno decks just do so well against it, so Jade is a very good way to sustain and continue pressure just with these cards, right? And it's pretty easy, it's very easy to add them, and the Shaman Jade cards have always been, you know, like, the angle of which you use the Shaman versus, say, the Rogue ones, is that the Shaman ones are the biggest swingy, or they have the biggest swings on the board because they're weapons, they're spells, so they literally reverse tempo on the board a lot. The Rogues have a Shuriken, but outside of that, they don't have another one, right? So Shaman's able to do that, and that's why it's always been just good. Like, when you have an early game, and then you have a mid game with the Jade Golems, you know, there's a variety of finishes, and this is definitely one finish with the N'Zoth, and you know, like, before, I used to run the Jade Chieftains with Evolve, right, and Doppelgangster. Like, I literally just add 2 Gomp Doppelgangsters, and instead of the Devolves, I add Evolve, and it's just, like, there's lots of different guys to you know, evolve into just a lot of mid-range tempo. So, yeah, it's getting better and better. I'm seeing it more and more every time I'm running, like, you know, Gazaga's decks. But how about you, Tess? What do you think of this?
I actually played against this kind of deck a lot at Legend lately. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come back, the board clear really deals with aggressive decks well, and Double Healing Wave and Halal, obviously, is really nice. I think my favorite thing whenever I play against decks like this is when they brand Bronzebeard into J-Claws, which is an interaction that most people don't really think about. It's like,
yep.
Whoa, right. J-Claw is a battle cry because brand doesn't specify minions, right? And every time it happens, like my chat goes off. It's like, whoa, what?
Next level play. It's like, did you ever, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really think about because weapon,
yeah.
There's not a lot of battle cry weapons, right?
Right.
There's
right.
like a couple, but so yeah, I really like it whenever these little Hearthstone interactions gets shown off. But yeah, I think the deck is making a really good push right now lately. But then again, it's just adds to the more shaman. Like, I appreciate a different kind of shaman.
Yeah.
When I face against it, it's like,
that's what first,
my first thought isn't going to be, oh, yay, Jade.
Shaman. Yeah.
I'm thinking like, okay, fuck this guy. Let me see that. Let me see that Tunnel Trog. Let me see that small time Bucky piece. Yeah. But after they play Brand Bronzebeard or some J stuff, I get really happy. It's like, oh, thank God, something different.
Do yeah, you really, or are really, you still really saying, good. Screw Shaman? Shaman just sucks. It's like class
like, hate. It's a different anger. It's when they hex my really valuable cards. Because against aggro Shaman, like, they don't run hex, right? So yeah. You don't really get angry over hex. But against these Shaman, it's like, fuck, three mana.
And by devolve, dude, you get tilted so much. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Devolve. Speaking of devolve, I think devolve, there definitely are some times where it is quite useful. It can be useful against Doomsayer. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to actually utilize it. But imagine if the hand buffing stuff becomes super popular, then like devolve, is a way to even negate all that stuff too. So that card, I think, has a very, very bright future. Just the next year, we're going to see devolve plays that are going to be like, yeah. Crap. That just completely negated my deck. So yeah, I like, again, Shaman, rich in tools. I think we've been saying that for a while now. And, I wish just more of the other classes had stuff like this. It would be really, really nice. okay, well, I think that's all the decks we've had. Let's see. It's Tosh, you were mentioning Tavern Brawl real quick too, right? This week. What is it?
Yes.
This week?
So it's a new one. Basically, you pick 10 cards. Mm-hmm. And every time you draw a card, you discover instead of drawing. So you always have 10 cards in your deck that you can discover from, which is really cool. So essentially, you can like create combos, but it's not like guaranteed combo, so there's nothing broken. And you can mess with your opponent's deck as well by using Death Lord and pulling out the minion like forcefully, and now he can never discover that minion. So yeah, it definitely looks like a lot of fun. I only played one game of it. I'm excited to try it out. Okay. Different. There's a lot of different strategies, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you can play Gadgets and Auctioneer and Innovate.
Trying
to more Innovate. Although, right. The one thing they change is that if you draw a card through like cards in your hand, like not just at the start of your turn, you don't get to discover right away. They give you a one mana spell to discover.
This way that's smart. Like, that's smart.
So you can't like try and create an infinite.
It's infinite. Loop, right? Yeah. Yeah.
So that's smart. I think they did a really smart thing in that perspective.
But can't you still go infinite though?
If you're not guaranteed to get innovate, right? You have a 30% chance to hit.
Yeah, because it's 10 cards. Yeah. So that's quite a few. Okay, that sounds fun, man. I'm gonna definitely give that a try after the show. Mm-hmm. It's always great when they try something new. I think this is the first time they've done this one, right? This is a brand new one. Cool.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I want to give a shout out, real quick shout out to the iTunes folks that have been leaving some nice 5-star reviews for us and great comments. If you do want to help out the show and you do listen to the show on your iPads or your iPhones, as well as Google Podcasts or Stitcher or any of those different podcast channels, leaving 5-star reviews, leaving good ratings helps people find us when they're looking for Hearthstone podcasts in those spaces. So I want to give a shout out to Spider Dream, James Disney, 1C7, and Razik for leaving the latest ones. And we've been getting a lot of them recently, so it's like awesome to see, guys. Like, keep it up. It's even just the nice words, man. It's like it makes us feel good whenever we get a chance to see those things too and making the show. So keep doing those if you can. and that would be amazing. Real quick plug to the Patreons too. We actually have a Patreon for Valleytown, and Valleytown currently is 100% supported by the Patreons. So if you want to go to patreon.com/Valleytown, take a look at the things that we got there, and if you really enjoy the show, I encourage you to pledge for it and help us out. We have made the milestone, so we will be doing milestone in just like a few seconds here, but I did want to give a shout out to some of our patrons, especially the producers, the legend producers, Mike T, Lewis G, and a new one, Dean P, for obviously being the big contributors. And a shout out to just some of our other patrons too, who are awesome folks too, have been with us for a while. North Cal, Esser G, Johnson C, William C, Gary D, Dustin D, Alex F, Sasha G, and Jeff B. Thanks so much, guys. Like, again, like, this show is, this show happens because of you guys. And, we think about that and really appreciate that each and every day. But now, your favorite part, guys, it's time. And Toast, I'm not sure if you were here for the first one, right? We're going to be, okay, so we're doing Smilestone right now.
Toast is like, what the fuck?
This is for the patrons. This is where we give our best smile for a good 20 seconds straight. It's yes.
Yeah, this is our best smile. Stare at the camera unawkwardly, all right. And you just smile.
Exactly. All right.
Are you ready?
All right, here we go. So at the count of three, your best smile. Here we go. One.
Wait, so we're just smiling
just
at the camera?
Just smiling at the camera.
Yes, you do not talk, you do not giggle, you smile.
Here we go. One, two, three. Okay. All right. Okay. I think that's good. I think that was only 10 though, but gosh, we're going to have to work on it. But, okay. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed our Smilestone segment, the most awkward period in our show, but people love it. So
we could cut out everything and just keep Smilestone.
Dude, you don't know how many comments we get on Smilestone every week. It's hilarious.
They're like, cringe. You're like, yep,
that's cringe. Exactly, and it's like, I love it too. I totally love it. And we're actually $14 away from our Laughstone, which a lot of the audio folks have been wanting us to do. So Laughstone is really close.
Oh, no.
Something to think about for the Patreon. If you want us to hear us laugh straight for like 20, 30 seconds, then make it happen. Happen, guys, totally make it happen.
It is a thing.
Okay, let's talk about events, since Noxious was at WESG over in China this past week, and I have to say, this is probably one of the most least publicized 150k tournament I have ever seen. I got a chance to watch the last couple rounds, but I don't know how much the community really got a chance to watch it. I don't think I ever saw it get over 10 on Twitch. Did either of you see? What was the high that you saw this?
It might have gone to like 8, 9K. I'm not sure if it went above 10K. I haven't seen that. Like, we were looking at the stats over there from China and just didn't really go very high. So,
yeah.
But how was it then? It was very low, it was at the top of the Hearthstone subreddit for a long time. So there's something there that just didn't happen.
But it's not enough,
like,
obviously.
There was no hype for it ahead of time, right? Like, no, the streamers really picked up on it. It was just, a bunch of casters heading there, and the player pool didn't help either, like, to be honest.
That's sad, just, though, the player pool. Yeah, I mean, this is very educational, though, but yeah, there weren't any huge name players there were notable players, like people that we know, but not huge, streamers or anything like that.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, we had Nerea, Orange, we had 6-0, we had some big names, but then it was all people who qualified in their region, because that's what it was. It was a regional qualifier that got people in. So if you were the best dude in Egypt, you would actually come in, right?
Yeah.
The best dude in Egypt is, it's not Kalento.
That's not.
Are you sure?
I'm just trying to exemplify my point here.
Or something like that. Yeah.
But so that's been kind of that was the story of the event for me. It's just no names that people recognize, and I'm pretty sure that's what caused the event to have such low attention given to it.
Was it at least big in China or over in Asia or not?
I mean, frankly, I don't know the Chinese numbers, but I imagine it had to be. It couldn't have been much lower. Usually Hearthstone events in China just get a lot of attention.
Yeah, right? That's what I would think.
So I would have been very surprised if it were any lower than we had in the West. It must have been like better by maybe even tenfold,
right?
Easily,
right. So, you know, it's hard for me to say, you know, was it worth it or not, given that I don't know what the Asian Chinese stats were just on their channels, but...
Well, worth it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if it's just like the West numbers, you know, 150K for that tournament, that's like, that's not good. You know, like, I don't know how other way to put it.
Alibaba, right? They're the ones behind it. It's just like...
But still, like throwing away money
off in the water, dude. They're literally doing this at an intentional loss to get exposure. Like, it didn't even matter.
But they didn't get that much exposure. That's my whole point.
They probably got honestly, anything is enough for these guys at that point. Is one of the ways you have to look at it. They have so much money. It's ridiculous. Like, when you've got an office in Silicon Valley, and you're like rolling in billions, and you're, you know, organizing an event, and you're intentionally inflating the prize pool for the sake of showmanship, then do you really give a shit?
Well, okay, right. I mean, I have a lot of things to say about that. Like, so inflating the prize pool, that's just inefficiency. I think we've proven that.
I agree.
The prize pool has no effect, or very little effect. It has some effect, but very little effect on how many people watch it. Otherwise, a ton of people would have watched this. 150K? I mean, that's like one of the biggest prize pools we have all year long.
Sure.
And we had very, very little people watching it. So that has very little to do with it. And yeah, if they have a lot of money, dude, why don't you just support like 3, 4, 5 other events in the community that are trying to do some cool things too? Like, I don't know, like the Onog stuff or the Fire or Batstone stuff or whatever.
But
right?
It's very separate, right? The Chinese scene and the West are very distinct in terms of who is in charge of making those calls.
Yeah, so I mean, exposure in the West, I guess, for Alibaba. There's not very many impressions from that, right? So Alibaba is huge in China. Do they really need more exposure in China? I mean, they're enormous.
Well, they're just trying to be everywhere. Like, is the way I look at it, right? It's like, how could I be more in their face?
Okay, well,
that's the way I look at it.
The only thing I would just question is just the efficiency of the money, because I don't think Alibaba will step away when folks put in this much money and then there's just like little return from it, or at least like even just stats, then they're gonna be less likely to do it. So yes, it's great for stats, it's probably great for Orange too for second place, you know, and they made a bunch of money and whoever else got money from it, but that's like a one-time shot versus like the longevity of events being supported, you know. And I that bothers me. That's definitely something that's like, oh my gosh, I mean, that 150K for that little viewership is just not worth it in my mind.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, I mean, companies from China, like especially Alibaba, they have a lot of money.
Like a
that
lot.
Doesn't matter if they have.
It matters. It doesn't. Like, if you buy a pack of gum at the store, that's exactly what they did.
So what? But go buy a pack. I mean,
I just told you what they did was buy a pack of gum at the store in their mind.
Yeah, but so they went and bought a pack of gum and gave it to some rich kid. Go buy a pack of gum and give it to... No, but I'm saying like the equivalent. Like, give it to like starving people. You know, like... You know what I mean? Like,
a pack of gum.
Yeah, I mean...
I get it, right? Because, in North America, like 150,000 tournament is a big deal. That's a lot of money, right? But in China, and like, we don't like... I don't know who this tournament is aimed for, right? Because I don't follow the Chinese scene. But I know in China, like, they have like... insane amount of money to be able to like
prize
sponsor
pool.
These events, like invite big names. I'm surprised they didn't just use the money to get like big names. Like, I will give you like
they wanted a qualifier,
but they were qualifiers.
Didn't want, like, Western player. It was an international event, so they had some people from South America, some people from NA, some people from EU, Asia, SEA. Like, they had people from everywhere, right? So APAC had like Staz come over. It's like the goal was to get an international event together and try to create some rivalry between countries. But as we all know, country rivalries in Hearthstone are just about as meaningful as like a fart in the wind, dude. Like, if no
what
one
do you mean we have
shit.
A we have an NA versus China thing going on.
They
right
do,
now,
but
right?
who's putting it together, right? Not NA, right? Like, so we just don't care in the West about that stuff, but in China they kind of do. So that's the angle you have to come at it from, right?
The NA versus China. I wonder if they just sponsor just so they can fly these North American players out for Chinese people.
It probably is, actually.
In front of the home audience, like, yeah, we took down these Americans.
But honestly, like...
It's like Rocky stuff.
There's a lot of people accusing China. Like, when you're in a match, right, and the Chinese players involved, they're like, oh, fucking China scamming. Like, they're just disconnecting the plug, pulling the plug on the shit whenever their player's behind.
Oh, my God.
It's like a lot of tinfoil hatting.
That's terrible.
I don't think
terrible.
They do... Yeah, That's too tinfoil.
No, no, no. It's too tinfoil hatty, but yeah. The point is, like, there's this general conception out there that that's what's happening. But the truth is, they do want to prove to the West that, yeah, you know, we can completely crush you in an event. I feel like after the Celeste been like just something to redeem themselves from ever since.
So the notion of this whole nationalism, or, you know, representing your country not being a very interesting format for the West, that's not true. That is not true at all. It's possible to make it viable. And I think Blizzard even has an initiative to do it this year, right? As one of their like side events. So it's just about promotion. That's all it's about. And
yeah, exactly. Like if every country was kind of on board with it, then make it a thing, then yeah, country definitely matters. But like for the NA Chinese stuff, it's like it's all China organizing it. They're like putting up the money, they're putting up the players, they're inviting the players, right? So like the NA players don't really see it as, you know, we have to represent. They're just
there's so many events everywhere that don't require that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like to them, it's just an event to play together against, you know, people from China. But like to China, it might be, I don't know, it might be like, you know, China versus NA. Let's go, team. Which is fine. Like,
that's fine too. Yeah, I mean,
World Cup and Olympics. But it does feel like it's a one-sided thing for this particular.
It was even worse though. So, like, to put it into perspective, you know, like that was also the case for other teams of other games, right? Dota and CSGO were region locked. Like, they were region bound. You had to have like a team that was represented by a country. And the thing is, in Hearthstone, like a lot of the players that are really, really good are concentrated sometimes in the same country. You can't have like five Swedes show up. But maybe if it was like a full open, you might have five Swedes in your event, right? To take like
Swedish
example, or Germans, right? We had two Germans. We had Bunny Hopper and 6-0 in, you know, top four. Who knows? Maybe we would have had Super JJ in it, or Life Coach, if the qualifier was broader than just...
Right.
So, like, I get where they're coming from, but I don't think it lends itself to the highest level of play, unfortunately.
It's not
like,
supposed to, though.
Shit shows, dude. Like, we had a dude, you know, Wild Growth and Jade Blossom on turn 7. Like, please, dude. Like, he had a full hand with Ancient of War and shit, and just... Jade Blossom and Wild Girls on 7 and nothing to do with it. So it's like the nerves got to him and he's not comfortable on stage. And like, I've been there, so I know exactly what it's like. The point is, the level of play was not as good as the tournament could have been if they had just stepped away from that model of qualifying, or if there had been like more steps to go through.
But that's the nuance of the event. It's supposed to be just representing your country and not necessarily we have this discussion all the time, and we have competitive Hearthstone all the time. So like, having something that's where you're representing the country, and you know, maybe one day it'll be more, a little bit more like the Olympics, where you're just, you know, happy to be representing your country, you know, and that's actually enough in itself. You know, we've seen those African swimmers who like almost drown, but they're like seriously happy to be representing their country, you know, and it is, come on guys, all right, I'm just,
this is the best we got.
No, I mean, but it, no, it's just like
drowning
that's
the
like
pool.
The most extreme example of like what you're talking about. It's like, he's not the greatest swimmer. Yeah, of course not. But that's not what it's about.
People like a runner in the 100 meters.
Yeah, it's not what it's about.
Practice
at all.
In the snow. Jeez, all day. Man. You take out the snow and the boots, and I just fucking fly like Dragon Ball Z.
Oh man. No, but anyways, congratulations to Staz for you know, actually the final series was really good. The final series was good. Final game was actually great.
The playoffs were amazing.
Yeah,
turned out that we actually got every player that was, you know, the best in the event. It seems. Have actually gone through, although we had some really big names kind of drop off, which sucked. But you know, there's not enough room for the amount of good players that were there in the top eight. So
yeah,
that was fortunate. At least, you know, we didn't end up with like a bracket or a group stage. It was like, okay, so these five really terrible dudes are in the same group, and you know, even a poor player is going to make it out. That's not what happened. We actually had some really sick names.
Yeah,
in the playoffs.
And Staz might be the first Filipino player to actually win something huge like that. So
that was so massive.
Yeah,
too.
It's crazy. It's definitely huge for him, and I think he's been getting a lot of like love in his country too. So, you know, mission accomplished, right? For the event, at least in terms of that aspect. The other event to talk about, it starts today. It's ESL Trinity Team League. We haven't actually brought it up on the show, you know, for weeks. It's definitely been announced for the last week or two, but I figure we bring it up now. First Team League to be announced since Archon Team League. So, I guess, what do you guys think about this? Obviously, the community loves just team leagues. But yeah, I want to get your thoughts on just the general team. Like, do you like this? Does this intrigue you guys at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting if they, take advantage of, team lead stuff you don't get in regular games. Because if you just, show the games and that's it, it's pretty much just watching people play Hearthstone. Like, you don't take advantage of team lead. But I think they did a few segments where, they listen in on the discussions that go, I think you should do this. Okay, they're going to play this deck, so you can play this deck and counter this deck. Like, that's stuff you don't get, but, on a one-on-one tournament. So I think they're doing a good job with that. People always say, what's the point of teams in Hearthstone? It's a one-on-one game, right? And, that's a good point. Specifically, you're not talking to your teammates in the middle of a game compared to, CSGO or League. But if you want to get better in Hearthstone, if you want to, learn new stuff, you having people consistently to talk with is a great thing. And these are people who are also strategizing with you. So. No, I mean, team leagues, we don't get too much of those. They seem to be doing really well. The ESL guys seem to put on a high production show so far. And, this has been a surprise already. Thijs with the 6-0. he beat all three opponents, their entire team using Murloc Paladin just by himself.
Which is actually crazy, because Murloc Paladin, I wouldn't say is the greatest right now in the metagame. And him winning six straight times with it is pretty insane.
Yeah, I expect to see Murloc Paladin on the ladder next.
I hope so, because I'll just be running.
Just play Murloc.
Please,
aggro,
play Murloc
Paladin. Fucking shredding them, right? Just play Finley everywhere with a random Vilefin Inquisitor.
Dude, I remember playing Murloc Paladin 3 or 4 days ago and losing 10 straight times with it. Yeah. Because it just
feels
running.
Bad, man.
Yeah.
Just play regular Control Paladin and run copies of Anything Can Happen.
Or Vilefin Inquisitor.
Yeah,
it's a good one drop. I mean, shit, it works, right?
People play things from below these days. You might as well play one Vilefin in your paladins.
Yeah, you play one Vilefin and you've literally shredded them. It's just so sad to think about, but it's true.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah, what do you think about team leagues, Noxious?
Where I hate country leagues, I actually like team leagues because they're a conglomerate of people who actually play together and have an incentive to practice together. I think there's a lot more meaning in, voluntary associations and shit like, hey, you were born there, compete. It's like, what the fuck? I've got nothing to do with where I was born. What am I really representing here? As opposed to a team where, oftentimes there's some sense of decision making that goes into joining it. I think representing a team is more meaningful as a player. And I feel, I relate to that more, honestly, in terms of how much I feel the players involved in that representation. So. I mean, I guess it's harder for people to relate to it since you're not from the team of the guy you're watching as a viewer. You can't say, oh, I'm a German, I'm rooting for the Germans. But you can still root for Life Coach and Super JJ, even though, they're on a team league. I feel like overall that's still true. People still do that. And team leagues just have this element of, you get to see how well a team is structured, right? You look at G2, they've been just shredding it for the past forever, basically, whenever Nihilum
since they've been
together.
Yeah.
They've just been shredding it. And you can tell that team is a team. It's if I had a gold standard for what a team is, it would have to be G2. And I don't think anything really comes quite close enough in terms, right now in Hearthstone, in terms of how much they work together, how much they feel they're synergizing in a way. I mean, a lot of it might have to do with Life Coach, kind of making the whole thing feel like a family. Yeah. Dad Coach is a thing. But it is definitely, cooler to me to watch team leagues than something like WESG in terms of how much I relate to it.
Yeah, I feel like with team leagues, it's like a dual, it's like good and bad for me. Or not good and bad, it's just some of it definitely resonates with me and some of it doesn't. The part that doesn't resonate with me is just the fact that teams, they're more and more, they're just becoming less and less of an entity in Hearthstone, right? Archon's gone now, we still got Tempest Storm. Like you said, we got G2, who is probably the best paradigm for a team in terms of playing and skill, where you have, Tempest Storm is probably better at marketing, as a team, and the brand itself. But there's not many teams just period. So a lot of these teams, I guess it's good for the teams because they're going to get exposure, and people didn't even know that some of these teams even existed. Like, you know, like Veris Pro, I think was playing earlier, right? And it's just like, they have a team, really? You know, it's like some of these
really
people,
VP has a Hearthstone team. Like, seriously? Yeah, some people just like, don't know.
Yeah, so I think that's good for the teams, but overall, for me, it's just like, it's really no different than any other kind of event that just happens to put some players together, you know. And if the teams were, the brands and whatnot were more present in the Hearthstone community, I guess it would be different. But, you know, we don't really see it. Even Luminosity, right? Luminosity has like a stacked ass team, and we really haven't even heard about Luminosity as a brand in the game since it was announced that they, you know, added all of these top players that we all know individually. We all see them finish at the top of the ladder, you know, every single month. So, yeah, it's cool. It's kind of nice. But again, like, I don't know. Part of me just doesn't really see why folks are so crazy hyped about it, you know? Yeah. But ESL is doing an awesome job of production, and it's good. They're, you know, if you're going to execute it, they're doing a good job of executing it.
Yeah, like, in this case, like, it's one of the few times where being on a team actually matters. But when you look at, like, when you ask, like, what's really the point of being on a team? Like, people have mentioned that Hearthstone in general, like, they don't get too much, you know, team exposure. Like, there's no reason to pick up players unless it's for a team league or you can get it at a super cheap price because, there's just no solid reason. You know, these guys aren't playing in a game together all at the same time. But, you know, team leagues are propping up, so you're going to start seeing more and more these team-based competition, mm-hmm. which I'm pretty excited for. Like, it gives them a reason to be on a team versus, well, I'm not on a team. This guy offered to, you know, sign me, so I guess I'm here.
I'm joining.
Yeah, yes, I'm joining.
Maybe it'll jumpstart the team environment again in Hearthstone. Hopefully that'll be good. That'll definitely be good to support some more players.
Yeah, there's no team rival. There's no real team rivalries in Hearthstone. It's more like player-player drama. it'll be interesting to see if anything props up. It's like, oh wow, Cloud9 beat Tempest Storm in ESL, and this other league they're playing in, you know, let's see a rematch.
So
hopefully more of that stuff can happen, because I really think those are healthy, even if it's like, you know, people, fans yelling at each other, like, that's what, you know, competition is all about, right?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of missed the Tempest Storm Archon rivalry. It's now that we're never gonna have it again. Okay, well, let's move on to Megatork's Workshop, which is the custom card segment that we do, where we talk about cards that we created or some of the patrons and viewers got a chance to create. We've got, let's see, what do we got here? 5 or 6 cards today. And Noxious, why don't we start with the cards that you brought, which the cow ones. Let's go with the cow ones first.
Sure, so I made 3 cards. I mean, some of them are kind of very, very conceptual. The first of them is the Mythical Bovine. So 6 mana, 6/6, death rattle, open the cow level, disregard, you know, the stat line, the cost. it wasn't really balanced too much. And then there's when it dies, it will spawn an unremovable token on the board that will take one of your 7 slots. That's called Cow Level Portal. And it reads, at the start of your turn, you summon a 2/2 Bovine Enforcer, which would be a little 2/2 cow with a bardish, I don't know.
How did you find that? Where did you find that picture? That is an awesome picture of the cow. The cow.
It's a card in WoW TCG called More Cowbell.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I kid you not. It's actually called More Cowbell. So that's just one of the coolest ideas, because, you know, recently somebody asked me the question, you know, why did they remove Heroes of Warcraft from the suffix of Hearthstone? You know, why is it called Hearthstone now and not Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft anymore? I'm pretty sure it's got nothing to do with them, you know, trying to introduce other franchises into Hearthstone, as I think that would be nonsense. But in terms of, like, it's got more to do, of course, with the fluidity of just a new expansion comes out. It's not Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft, Meets Streets of Gadotan, right? Anyway, so the idea here was, okay, what if they actually try to put in other franchises into the game? And I'm like, one of the coolest shit they could do is probably the cow level from Diablo. And, you know, we had the recent event that you had to do the whole cow king thing. So they've introduced the idea in the past. And I just thought this was a cool kind of memento that actually fits the Hearthstone, whimsical style, where you have like a mythical bovine. You're just like, what the hell is this? It's kind of a funny card, kind of like Angry Chicken. And it does something related to to a franchise that some people may not be familiar with, will never understand what the hell it's referencing, but a lot of people who've been around the Blizzard, you know, universe for a while will know. So I thought this was just a cool memento. The balance of it is not right. And I also wanted to talk about enchantments as a cool development, you know, tool for Blizzard, maybe in terms of design. I wish they would finally introduce them, because they've been doing so much of it in Tavern Brawls. So many times they've just added those effects in Brawl, and they, you know, they've slapped it onto minions like Bran and Baron Rivendare, but we don't yet have another card type that is untouchable in terms of minion trading. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love Lorewalker Cho in an artifact form. You know, I would love to have that guy just stick around and not be touchable, but no, you know, I'm forced to put him at a 0/4 and it's just going to die to the next thing that shows up on the board. And this type of mechanic, I think, opens up so much fun avenues where the game just becomes a degenerate, you know, mindfuck fest, where you can suddenly play a really fun deck because you have like a bunch of these cool effects. And maybe like whenever you play a spell, it does five different things that are all insane, right? And it just creates this this mayhem environment for fun, you know, to be had.
Yeah, we talked a little bit last week about you're talking about enchantments with certain things, but we talked about maybe at least simming auras or getting around it with what they currently have, just with putting them on weapons. Basically, weapons just kind of act as, like, you have a Lorewalker Cho, you know, effect on a weapon, so you can, like, just hold the weapon as long as you want. So that's a way to work around it. It's not, you know, the most optimal way, but if they are restricted for whatever reason, that is something they could possibly do.
Yeah, I like card types. That's one of the that's what I like about just design in general, is adding exclusions to general rule sets. Like right now, like, number one, I hate weapons in Hearthstone. I've hated them since the dawn of time, because I think the fact that they give a card charge twice and, you know, just doesn't interact with minions on a minion decision basis, right? The minion doesn't get to dictate traits. I just hate that.
Make it zero attack, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right, but that's at that point, like, why is it a weapon, right? So, like, I get what you mean. It's supposed to be something the guy's holding in his hand.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I think there's a way to have, like, enchantment decks, where you have a deck that reads something like whenever, a minion that reads whenever you play an enchantment or whatever you want to call those, do something. So suddenly you have, like, a deck with minions that synergize with this, kind of like Secrets, except they're another card type entirely that takes space on the board.
I'm sure
we'll get them at some point, 100%, but... You know.
Yeah, but, I think I saw one of the Blizzard designers comment how this was how they wanted to do auras, like effects, like seamlessly, not seamlessly, like the best way they can do it so far with the current technology, right?
Yeah, without revamping the entire client to accommodate it.
Yeah.
And I mean, they've been, you know, I think the first time we saw it, I want to say it's the Karazhan adventure with Dorothy. With that portal shooting out.
There was a Brawl at the same time with the same type of concept, you're right.
You know, they're doing it more and more in the Brawl. I think with the adventure, with the Brawl, that they keep, you know, using this mechanic they have, which is essentially an unkillable minion that takes up a slot. I think they really want to do something like that, but I don't know, like, is this a good enough implementation that they can actually just start creating cards that does that
for it?
Yeah, I see.
So maybe they're working on like a UI thing where there's a slot for that stuff, and you can have like a certain amount of auras in your, not in your deck, but, you know, on the board at once, so you can't just like stack five of them and let mayhem ensue.
I feel like we're getting closer to that, because they were talking about red mana before, and I mean, I think we're starting to get to the point where they're going to be introducing very new things to
I'm kind of triggered,
complexity.
Though, because I feel like I brought up the red mana crystals a while back.
I know, well, sure, but...
It is so good. It is such a good idea. I'm so sad they didn't go with it.
Yeah, I know. That would have been... I mean, I would have liked to just see that level of complexity added to the game. But, and, you know, talking about this Mythical Bovine... And by the way, we didn't even talk about the cards, the folks listening. It's a 6-mana, 6/6 body. It's an epic card. Death Rattle opened the Cal level. And then the portal is a 6-mana spell, Cal level portal, epic. At the start of your turn, summon a 2/2 Bovine Enforcer. You know, that just makes me think, the Mythical Bovine makes me actually think about them adding cards. You know, if we're going to add this RNG aspect to it already, you know, and we're, when we're talking about like summoning certain cards or certain, you know, summoning, you know, we've had summoning random cards in the, you know, in the past, or maybe adding a random card to your hand, just these type of events, right? How cool would it be for these events to, or having cards that actually summon random events that are excluding gameplay? Or just, I mean, it goes beyond even gameplay. So,
well, like Ysera, right?
No. Like beyond this. Like we're talking like Death Rattle. It's like it would read something like Death Rattle, have a random event occur. And then the event could be, you know, like you summoning, you know, a card or whatever. It could be you get a free pack in Hearthstone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that kind of thing.
That opens up an avenue for like, yeah, I mean, like gain 5 gold, gain 5 dust.
Just whatever, like, you know, like, so it, yeah, it's not.
It creates like a weird meta where the only thing people play is like at low ranks is just that kind of stuff. And I mean, sure.
That okay. That's right, okay. But right?
No, I don't think it is. Because then it becomes like you play Vanilla Dude that gives you collection stuff, so you feel pressured into playing that until you
it's going to be one of these things where it's like it's very rare that you get something that's outside of the game. You know, it's still meant to for you to get something that's inside randomly inside the game, but every once in a while you get like, you know, a little mini lotto ticket, you know, that's like, oh, you know what, I just got like a free pack, you know, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, I think you
reward sometimes like a machine, like a slot machine reward. Type
a little bit, yeah, for like the super casuals, not like.
But maybe not for cars, right?
Maybe. Like,
if you just have a card, it's really odd.
It's a concept, you know. I just,
yeah, I don't know. I feel like people would just try to maximize that, as even if it's like the most inefficient way.
Inefficient shit ever. Yeah,
they're just gonna like, you know, duplicate that, do it over and over again. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely agree. Like, maybe there's some fun things.
Yeah, it's just some kind of fun random element that happens.
It's very risky when you introduce stuff like that, because there are people who will look to abuse it mm-hmm. as much as they can. So Blizzard has to design it in a way that's essentially can't be abused, right?
And it's so stale that it basically doesn't become fun.
Yeah.
Or, like, you really don't want to implement the ability to farm resources within your game, because then the entire game becomes about farming resources, and then you've short-circuited rewards in some way.
Maybe it's getting, I don't know, a card back, or just something. I mean, it's conceptual, again. Like, it's just something.
A card back I'm down for. Like, you tell me trigger Mimiron's head to get a special card back, I'm like, all right, fuck it, we're going in.
That's more of an achievement, though. That's not as much a random element. I don't know.
Well, a random element I don't like. I'm tired of random shit being put in games for the sake of it. Like, every game has them now. It's too much. But that's just, like, a designer's perspective. Yeah. It's good for, like, the monkey brain, but it's not so good for... It's true. Yeah. Like, you actually get, like, a high from that stuff, but I'm tired of...
Well, I actually think that's one thing we lack in Hearthstone now. Like, when people buy packs, they just, you know, the problem with, like, the net decking and just our meta now is that whenever you get packs and you get a legend, you're just like, okay, I'm glad I got it. I don't have to spend 1,600 dust on it, you know, basically. It's not like you know, you're opening packs, you know, like when you're opening, I don't know, a Pokemon pack or whatever, or maybe not so magic, but... You know what I mean? It's just that baseball card opening feel where it's like, oh my God, I got this rare card that I'm so happy I have. You know, there's no element of that in Hearthstone anymore. And I don't know, maybe there are for newer players. I'm so far removed from it.
Okay, so let's imagine a world where like every 10th pack you get is actually a golden pack and contains like a golden card on top of the 5 ones that you have. Is that something you'd like, or is that too predictable because it's every 10 packs?
It's too predictable, in my
opinion. Okay, so let's assume you have a chance of getting a golden pack. Is that exciting enough?
Yeah.
Or is that not tied to... Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's nice too. I don't mind there being extra random stuff
to get in terms of rewards, but I don't want it to be tied to like the game itself.
Right,
the game
right. Game. No, I understand that. It's just like, I mean, again, it's like an out there concept, but it's always good to just at least think about it. Okay, well, why don't we go on to, you have a dispersion, right? That's yours.
Dissipate.
It's called dispersion,
my bad.
Yeah, it's a 3 mana spell, epic card. It's for priests. Snapcast, yep. Which is a new text, or new text word, or keyword. If you are targeted by a spell, play this and become immune this turn.
So this is basically an ice block that you hold in your hand, and you have to float enough. You have to have enough mana unlocked to actually play it. So the point is, it's a card you hold in your hand, 3 mana. So you have to pass the turn with 3 open mana, so the opponent knows whether or not you can be, you know, holding it and, you know, trigger it.
Oh, I see.
So like, if you have 2 mana open, there's no way that you can actually get immune to a pyroblast or something along those lines. Unlike Secrets, which you can set up, you know, Eyes Block on turn three, and then, hey, I have Eyes Block for the rest of the game. This is, no, if I want to be immune, I actually have to have this in my hand, and they have to play a spell, and I have to have three mana. So the easiest way to not trigger it too early is to actually saturate your mana, right? Like, make sure you're very mana efficient, and that way it'll only be available to you whenever you want it. The point is to create a type of instant response, you know, like in Magic, where the guy plays a card, and you say, hey, fuck you. You know, this isn't going to happen. That isn't something like Counterspell. Like, honestly, I'm at the point now where I'm tired of secrets a bit too much. Like, when a mage drops a secret off a random effect, because that's the only way to get them nowadays, I'm actually not having fun. I don't enjoy casting that stuff. I'm just like, oh, look at this player's anguish. Like, his mental anguish right now is reaching levels of fucking inhumanity you don't even understand, because there's like $80,000 on the line,
right?
And it's hinging on whether or not this dude babbling book to fucking Counterspell or not, right? Like, this is ridiculous. And it's not something you can really play. I mean, I don't like it, and I think, like, this type of mechanic, like, your opponent can choose to mind game you by default. Right, by keeping three mana open. With secrets, it's like, oh, here's this random effect. Good luck. Like, diffusing it. And if you don't, then you lose. So I'm not even sure this is necessarily like a mechanic that I want to see in Hearthstone, but I like the concept of Snapcast. One of the things that happens with these types of mechanics, though, is you have to be very cautious with how many of them you implement, right? Because, like, if you implement one that's like three mana, one that's two mana, one that's one mana, like, it gets kind of triggering, because the same issue of secrets happens all over again, where you don't know what to play around.
And they're totally in play at the end of games, like, always.
But this one is so bad, right? Like, the thing with Snapcast is they're not going to be crazy good. It's not going to be, like, something that kills a minion you have, for instance. It's like, you're targeted by a spell. You could do, like, anything irrelevant. Like, you could try to heal me with Flash Heal, and it goes off.
Yeah, you can still play around it, is basically what you're saying.
It's so, like, meaningless in terms of general impact, aside from that one circumstance where, you know, Freeze Mage tries to go off on you. So it's easier to trigger. People can add fodder to trigger it easily. Usually, like, every deck has a fodder to throw on this.
I like the concept of having your mana crystal still be in play when it's not your turn. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was it. That was the concept. I mean, you could probably come up with, like, a dozen of them. Instant casts are so easy to implement, like, in this way. That's what secrets are trying to do. But I believe we've reached a point now where secrets, by the fact that they can be played preemptively and don't give much information to your opponent, you know, with any, like, clear indicator aside from the question mark, is just...
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, this is even more of a mind game. This is even more of a mind game than secrets, so...
Yeah.
Cool. Toast, any comments on this card, or...?
So I never really got into Magic. I think I tried it before. And as a new player, like, the experience was, like, I got all these, like, cool synergy cards. And I think I played against a guy playing a blue deck, which has a lot of these counter stuff, right? So I play something, he's like, okay, no, you can't do that.
Because, like, what?
And then I'm like, oh, okay, let me just play this card then. And he's like, no, I'm going to counter that too. It does add a lot of strategy. And make control decks more appealing. But, I mean, I'm sure the Blizzard guys has talked about this with Hearthstone. It's like, they really do want to make it as
unfun
as possible.
It's unfun.
Yeah, you give up a lot of those strategy in exchange for a more streamlined process. So, like, even with secrets, right? It's like, you tell your opponent that I have a secret that you have to play around. But I do agree, like, when it's Babbling Book into a secret, it's like, well, shit, now I gotta either play around everything or play around nothing. Can't afford to play around nothing, because if it's a secret they put in themselves, you can make educated guess, right? It's not going to be Potion Polymorph, it's not going to be Mirror Entity, it might be Counterspell, most likely it's going to be Ice Block. Like, there's a bit of the mind games there, like strategy, but when it's just from off Babbling Book or capitalist Tome, it's like, well, this is not really playing around anything, because I just have to either test, right, let me just coin, let me just target this spell, let me just play a weak minion, or I just have to go, all right, I'm not gonna play around anything, big minion down. If it's Potion Polymorph, if it's Mirror Entity, well, I guess I just lose because he got that specific secret. But yeah, like, it would be interesting to see if Blizzard ever goes down to the whole floating mana strategy. Because in Gadgetzen, all that red mana stuff was a mechanic.
Like, right.
If you float a mana,
yep,
you get benefits from it.
Yeah.
But apparently they just didn't think it was
I still think it's on the table. It's just not
it's gotta
this
be,
release.
Yeah. On another iteration, perhaps, but it's definitely something they're going to... I mean, I'd be surprised if they threw any concept out at this point, aside from like the most glaringly anti-fun shit, like, hey, discard your hand, my turn, or I'm taking control of your turn. Like, that type of stuff is probably not something that's going to happen, but, you know, all the interactions that led the players plan ahead of time... you know, stuff like dispersions, for instance, which is kind of an extreme example of, hey, you're shut down.
Yeah.
Like that stuff, red mana, they definitely are talking about it and trying to find an elegant way to make it happen. I think that's what it comes down to, is elegance of design.
There's a lot of existing cards that make it hard to create cool effects. One of the designers today actually said they had a minion that was like a reverse genie. In which case you cast a spell on that minion
right.
and it duplicates that spell on every single other minion.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this means if you genie and naturalize, your opponent draws two cards for every minion on the board. So you can pretty much insta-mill your opponent with that combo. And it really sucks because it seems like a cool effect, right?
It really sucks unless you make it an 8-mana guy and then who cares? Right? I mean, it's like... Yeah. It would. I feel like that's the type of win condition Mildred would be like, sure, I'll take it at 8 mana. It's really fringe, but maybe I can make this work. And that means they're not naturalizing until turn 8. So like, there's probably a balance point you can strike with this card that you're mentioning that probably works, like a legendary 8-8 or whatever.
Yeah, maybe once Thor's Stand rotates out, so the combo potential is like a lot lower.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it'd be nice to see a mill possibility.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, that's one thing that we're just completely missing now. And people talked about Jade Idol. It's one thing we didn't quite get a chance to talk about with one of the comments from one of the designers. But, you know, I miss that ability. You know, it didn't have to be straight Fatigue Warrior. I mean, because I think that's what they just didn't want people to play anymore, are these boring ass Fatigue Warriors that just remove and shit. But, you know, the old Rogue was actually really fun and difficult to play, you know, just... I don't know how many times I watch Ryzen play that deck over and over and over again, you know, in the past. But we could use one of those decks just in the metagame in some weird corner case scenario because it's good. I think it's good for the game.
Yeah. I mean, I just like fun stuff, you know, like I just want more amazing fun decks that do crazy things.
Yeah.
I just like them. I like combos and I like the reaction, you know, of a new player to a combo that they've never seen.
Exactly.
Like, that's the cool thing. And I feel like we don't have too many of those right now, aside from Avion Okun. It's like, oh, I know what this is going to do. Like, I know, like the first time you encounter Leeroy, you know, PO Faceless, you're like, holy shit, that was nuts. Like how many of those
exist? We don't have those much anymore. I mean, I think the latest one that we've seen was the one with Fool's Bane and the I freaking love that. That was so fun to play. Unfortunately, it's just not good enough anymore. You know, like you can't survive long enough with that deck anymore. So I was trying it the other night to be specific about it, and I couldn't get it to work. But that was so cool. You know, it's like a puzzle. You know, working out if you can win a game like 6 turns in advance, you know, and trying to figure it out. That's really awesome. Okay, well, anyways, let's move on to the next two cards. We got two more just from
I have another one.
Oh, did you
put in? I think the hunter one. Well, whatever, we can do it afterwards.
Oh, actually, yeah, you have the hunter one. Let me pull that up real quick. That's a friendly tech. Friendly fetch.
Yes.
0 mana. Shuffle a friendly beast into your deck at the start of your turn. Draw all copies of it.
Interesting.
Friendly beast. Shuffle a friendly beast into your deck. One that's on your
board.
Okay, one that's on the board.
Let me explain it.
Okay.
You take one of your beasts that you have on the board, put it into your deck, and then at the start of your next turn, you draw all the copies of it you have into your deck. Now,
okay.
So whether you put them in through other means, whatever, it's a zero cost spell. The point is you lose board voluntarily. To then regain that beast into your hand next turn. So it's usually on average pretty bad, but it's going to cause a spot where you're going to get your natural draw off the top and then you're going to get the two extra beasts. So it's actually creating like some measure of card draw that's pretty good. But it's losing you a lot of tempo. So it's only going to be good in cases where you're looking for combo pieces that happen to be beasts. Like Double Timberwolf, you want to get them because you want to combine them with Unleash, whatever the case may
be. Okay, yeah.
You know, like I just thought, this isn't an effect that's good right now, I imagine. But there's got to be a world where, you know, you play high main, it doesn't die, you trade into it, it's a 6-1, and then you smash it back into your deck, and then, hey, get the second one out at the same time.
I think it's good.
And replay it on the following turn, right? It's just a cool combo card that has potential in the future if Blizzard designs around that kind of stuff. But, yeah, we don't know. Nope. I just thought the effect was really awesome and janky.
I think it's interesting. I mean, this definitely falls in the line of how hunters draw cards. They never draw cards in a very orthodox way. They always have to draw it in some weird, you know, like, okay, we can, you know, just flip cards to see who gets, you know, if I get a higher card, I draw a card, or... you know, or it's some kind of ball of spiders, you know, or, you know, whatever it is, right?
Yeah,
it's kind
like of... if they ever had a gang up for beasts, or like, I don't even know, right, what they're gonna do with design space in the future. That's kind of the point. It's like, who knows, maybe one day there's like a card that transforms every beast in your deck into let's go with Weasel Tunneler, right, like as a meme that people like, you know, in the chat people are mentioning Weasel Tunneler a lot. It's like, yeah, what if it transforms all your beasts into Weasel Tunnelers, and fuck it, just get all of them in your hand and drop them on the board.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. That's your game plan from here on out. So I don't know. It could be a lot of fun stuff.
All right. Well, let's see. Actually, why don't we save the next two for you know, just our next show, just because we're kind of running over here. And get to a couple emails just to finish off the show. So Haslock 8, to be specific, has a quick question about Hunter. If 2-mana Hunter weapon existed now, would Hunter be playable?
Well, it really depends on what the... let's say Glaivezuka, right? 2-mana weapon. That was pretty good back in the day. Like, would you see Pirate Hunter? Because you can curve it out, right? So, like, when I look at Jade... I mean, when I look at Shaman and Warrior right now, they both have a 1-mana weapon and a 2-mana weapon. And I don't know, if it's just a 2-mana weapon like Glaivezuka, is it enough to justify running small time buck? I'd say no. Just because if you only have 2 copies of a 2-mana weapon and you run small time buck, you have to hit it. If they had like a 1, maybe another 2-mana 2 attack weapon or a 1-mana weapon, then definitely yes. But I don't know if 2-mana weapon's enough.
Okay. I agree. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, Glaivezuka would solve the problem. And my response to that is, well, you know, when warriors are running 6 weapons between Upgrade and Azoth's First Mate and Fiery War Axe, and you're looking at 2, I don't see how you're getting away with it.
Well,
like, I just
I think you're right. I mean, very few decks beat warriors straight up just, you know, like that. Just because warriors are so fast. So I think a better thing to think about is really, can Hunter beat other classes? You know, like even maybe just consider the Shaman Pirate, but let's just talk about just some of the Kazakus decks, you know, and the Reno decks. Can Hunter beat those decks with a faster start? And I don't know.
I don't know what faster start they have right now. Like, that's the thing. Like, Fiery Bat, that's it.
No, but what I'm saying is, if they did have a 2-mana weapon, I think they could run that. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, they only have 1 2-mana weapon, right? Like, and it's, I mean, they would have to be good. It would have to be really, really good, and it would have to be consistent enough on turn one that it doesn't need the patches package, and it's just like the extra thing they slap in because they can, and they don't really need the minion.
Right.
Right.
I actually think it's really close, my personal opinion. I think Hunter still, if it can just have tempo in the first, after the first 2 turns, can still push a lot of damage to your face very, very quickly. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about just speed, tempo, you know, Hunter. We're not talking about, you know, mid-range Hunter or anything like that, because that can't, I don't think that can win at all anymore. But if you can get 5 damage, holy shit, in the first 5 or 6 damage in the first 2 turns, that's enough, man.
It's just tough right now because you're either playing against Patches deck, which are a bit too fast for you, or you're playing against Reno decks, which means your hero power have a hard time grinding them out. Because, you know, Hunter isn't traditionally like a really, really fast kill deck, right? They generally like play some tough minions like Savannah Haimei and like, you know, a couple of kill commands on turn you know, 809 to really like just burst you down with the high value minion in the mid range game, which means, you know, your opponent has a lot of time to draw Reno Jackson, and now, you know, the whole counter is reset it again. So I just think right now with Patches and Reno being the two main decks out there, it's just really unfriendly for Hunter in its current state. I don't think Hunter's bad. I just think it's a really bad meta for Hunter. Obviously, two mana weapon does help.
It's really bad for Hunt, or it's really bad for that class in this meta when other classes are doing a better job of what you're supposed to be doing. And that's the issue right now.
Exactly, yeah. Saying it right. Like, they would literally need, like you know, a few Mechatronics workshops ago, I forget when, I made it like this one mana card that gave you like a 1/3 weapon or a 0/3 that didn't do anything. Like, it was like the 0/3 weapon that just like webbed minions when you attacked them or whatever. Like, it made them unable to attack on the following turn. Like, if you have enough of those, you know, cheap weapons and cheap effects that you can just, they can double up as weapons, stuff like upgrade.
Right.
Then sure, I'm sure the fight package just makes a ton of sense, even if it's played defensively. Even if you play defensively in Hunter for no reason other than because I need the early game to stabilize, it would be viable. But because they don't have like 1 and 2, I think 2 alone would not be enough. Like, would Warrior be able to do Pirates? Like, just try it out, right? Go ahead and build Pirate Warrior, cut out Nazoth's First Mate, cut out Upgrade, and let me know how it goes. And all you have is Fire War Axe and, you know, Arcanine Reaper. Let me know how consistently you get that 3 damage push off of your small-time Buccaneer, and how, you know, worthwhile your Pirate package really is at that point. That's the big question for me.
Yeah, the consistency is obviously not going to be as good, clearly. But even from, you know, like you said, defensive wise, at least you get that Buccaneer probably down to sometimes down to a 3-1, you know, after you've traded the patches and if you traded the, you know, he trades into your buck or whatever. So even from that standpoint, it's better than what they have to deal with now, which is actually ridiculous. Like, they're going to have two minions on the board versus your none. And that's with Alley Cat. Alley Cat's supposed to be good. You know,
Alley Cat is actually a pretty good.
It's so sad. Like, it's like not even. It is. It's just. It's not compared to that opening. It's so sad. Crazy. But okay. Anyways, next question from Brent. Last question we got here is talks about custom modes, and goes in and talks a lot about like StarCraft, how they have like all kinds of different custom settings. I guess you can do, and you know, talks about how maybe we can possibly do that with Hearthstone in terms of how much time you have to play, like maybe concepts of speed Hearthstone, or even certain cards or certain card pools or bans, whatever, that sort of thing. Do you think we'll ever see this type of ability in the game ever? And if so, what kind of custom modes would you like to see?
Well, I mean, never say never, but I don't see it for
10 years from now.
I don't see it for the next 2 years. It's just like something, it's very cool, neat, like to challenge your friend and be able to say, hey, we're only playing with GVG cards, so all your non-GVG decks are banned, and the game will like reinforce that, right? I mean, you can do that now. You can kind of do the custom thing now with your friends, like, all right, I'm gonna have a timer, and obviously that's not as fun, right?
Yeah, but, of course, because it's not within the
well, it's just harder to organize, right?
I just don't think it's something people really ask for. It's nice to have, but on the list of nice to haves, I'd say that's like very near the bottom. I think people rather have tournament modes and replays.
No question. I mean, there's definitely no question that there are lots of things higher priority than that.
Yeah, it's nice though. You're right. Like, if tournament mode does happen, though, like, I think that extra restriction is, like, the technology is there. We've seen it. Cards are banned in Tavern Brawl, right? Like, the secret eating stuff against Diablo, whatever. Like, they have the tech. So it's just a matter of once the tournament mode gets here, which hopefully at some point it does, then it's just a matter of adding that extra layer of customization onto that client, whether it's external or within the client itself.
What custom modes would you like to see in the future of Hearthstone?
Pauper would be great. Like, commons and rares only.
I'd like to see Speed Hearthstone, to be honest.
Blitz would be my favorite thing. Nos Hearthstone. Like, just a Blitz journey?
Yeah, like a Nos Dormu Hearthstone. That'd be awesome, man.
Yeah, and there's probably like a lot of a lot of cards you can't play. You definitely can't play Auctioneers.
That's for sure.
Yeah, you can't play
or Walk of Chill. Or there are cards you play just totally fuck your opponent, right?
Yeah, Lower Rocket Chill is a good one because your opponent, if they play a spell, it takes a whole like 3 seconds for the animation. Yeah.
Well, even Ragnaros takes like half of your timer, probably.
Yeah, probably something like that. Yeah.
That would be very cool. Maybe they could do it for a brawl, like just have speed mode.
I think they said they tried it, and like at 15 seconds, it broke the game. I think 30 is more reasonable. I think
really? 15 seconds broke the game? How did it break the game?
I think it's because.
Have you ever played Nos? Like, I do.
But how did it literally break the game?
It just breaks the game. Like, literally turns overlap for. Like if you play, okay, let's say I play Nozdormu against you, your turn comes around, you do your thing. Usually that turn is fine. What's not fine is when I go Noz, and then you play your turn, then my turn comes around. But at the end of your turn, instead of just, you know, being nice and passing, you went like full fucking retard on Brewmasters, hopping each other back to the hand. And you played Lore Walker Cho while playing spells, and you queued up 5 coins.
Right,
my turn
comes around,
yeah.
Your turn's back. So the issue is never the first turn, unless there's like a really crazy combo the guy pulled off. Is the turns after that. And as it goes, it just gets more and more degenerate. So yeah. If you start at 30 seconds, I think you're...
I thought
like,
they fixed that. They never fixed that?
I think they added Band-Aid solutions. So sometimes right now, with the rope, you actually see it increasing when you make
it. Right. Yep.
Exactly.
I
like that.
Yeah, but, you know, you can eat into your opponent's turn, and you don't really notice it because you have like 75 seconds right now. Mm-hmm. Because losing 5 seconds, then it's not a big deal. You probably don't even know you're losing 5 seconds. But in a 15-second Tavern Brawl game, like 5 seconds is like a third of your turn. And you don't really notice it. It's like, wait, this turn feels a lot faster than my previous turn. I don't know what's going on.
The rope just goes down.
Yeah.
Yogg is the biggest offender. Holy shit.
Yeah. But yeah, if they can fix that and how the whole timer system works, then I can definitely see a blitz mode being pretty funny. It's like, oh god, rope.
I think that would be super popular. That's so good. I think if they made that into a tavern brawl, that'd be one of the most popular tavern brawls.
Yeah,
consistently too, like people wanting it back. So
yeah.
But yeah, hopefully we do see something, or at least them creating some more, you know, new modes like that. But from the standpoint of us making custom or having that ability, I don't see that for at least 5 years. I mean, I'm just guessing.
It goes by quick once the infrastructure is in place, right? Like,
think so?
The thing is, how long until tournament mode? That to me, that's the big question. Once we have that timeline, then I think within a year you can add the customizations, like a year later.
Okay.
So if it takes 4 years for tournament mode, you're right. 5 years for customization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to wrap up the show, but I guess one little thing before we wrap up the show. Did you guys see Life Coach get 8 patches in a row?
Yes.
Did you see that?
I didn't see what happened.
Yeah. Life Coach had 8 straight games where he got 8 patches in his hand, like Mulligan. 8 straight times, dude. I think they did the math on it, and it's... What was it? It was like... I don't even know, crazy amounts of zeros.
It's about like 3% for one game.
Right.
So you have to like...
It's higher than that for one game, right? Because you're like, you're actually seeing like, say, 3 cards, maybe 6. So like 6 cards out of 30, you've got a pretty good chance of getting it. Like it's upwards, it's like 15%-ish, isn't it? Like each individual game. Because it's 3% per card and you've got like 4, let's say, in your
even
opening
if 15% of that, it's still like...
Oh, now we're talking
one
like
in a million. I mean, we're talking about we're talking like one in a million.
Ridiculously
still.
Low.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
it's crazy, man. You should watch. Anyways, the links are definitely in the show notes. For those of you that aren't aware, I always put the show notes in the links for on ChampionV.tv. So for the Valuetown episode, you can find it there. But the video is so funny watching him. You know, Life Coach too. He's just doing the math too, right? Every time it happens, he's like, "Oh my god!" Then he's just adding on another zero each time.
It's like billions, right? At that stage,
it might be billions. Actually,
it's got to be some ridiculous fucking number.
It's crazy, dude. Totally crazy. But all right, why don't we round out the show with some shout outs? Toast, always a pleasure to have you on, and particularly today to talk about, you know, just all the developer stuff. But where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter @DisguisedToast or on my Twitch which is disguised host with a H at the end. And I'll be streaming after this, so come check it out.
Yeah, definitely go check it out. And fun decks today, or?
I think I'll play mostly Tavern Brawl. This Tavern Brawl looks pretty exciting.
All right, sweet.
Happy, excited.
Yeah, I can't wait to try it out too. Noxious, shout-outs?
Big shout-out to Complexity, as usual, the guys on the team, and hopefully the year that's coming in terms of results for them should be good. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter at COL for Complexity _ Noxious, and on YouTube, Noxious GLHF. I haven't been uploading much since I was in China, but I'll try to resume that tonight or tomorrow.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Awesome. And I'll round things out by thanking both of you guys, Toasty and Noxious, for doing the show with me today. All the folks that were watching, and I would say follow the show's Twitter account. I'm so bad at actually promoting. I never do. So follow at ValueTownGG. I always announce when like the shows are on that account. Obviously on my personal account too, I try to do that. But you can check out all the VODs for the show on youtube.com/championv2. All the previous episodes are there. And this one will be up a little bit later tonight. Of course, on iTunes, if you're a podcast listener, you'll find it a little bit later tonight and early in the morning. So definitely be on the lookout for that. And just one last reminder, again, if you want to support ValueTown, we do have a Patreon at patreon.com/ValueTown. Go check it out and, you know, throw us a pledge if you enjoy the show and what we do. But that's going to be it, guys, for ValueTown this week. So for Disguised Toast, Noxious, and myself, ChamManV, we'll see you next week.